Blog Talk Radio.
Any day now, I will hear you say goodbye, my love. And you'll be on your way. Then my wild, beautiful bird, you will have flown. Oh, any day now, I'll be all alone. Oh, any day now, when you're someone new. Oh, to my sad surprise, then the blue shadow will fall all over town. Oh, any day now, love will let me die.
Right, don't fly away. This is the last word. It's April the 18th, about 6 days before the big day. About, let's see, well, we'll get into that next week. But, yeah, the big day is coming. That's my birthday, the 23rd of April. That's, you know, there are the biggest days of the year for me, Michael Lawson here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where it's a little overcast, but it's that rain is coming, they say. The biggest day for me is my birthday and Christmas. I don't know about Easter. I don't know about Memorial Day, you know, but the biggest days for me have to be my birthday. Absolutely. No other day. Because that's the day that is only your day. That's your day. It's nobody else's day. Your birthday. That is the day. Your birthday. And nobody can take that from you. Nobody. That's your day. Nobody can take that from you. It's a day that you have all by yourself. And I want to tell you, I just look forward to having those days. I just look forward to it. It's a day where, you know, you wake up. I remember when I was turning 10. I could not sleep the night before. My father, you know, on our birthdays, my brother and myself, he made that day for us. And my father, he was always involved with us. But my mother was more involved with us. But on our birthday, my brother and I, nobody, not my brother, not my mother, I was his. And I went everywhere with him. He said, come on, you're going with me. You go to the store, you're going to go with me. But we got dressed, and he took us out to New York City. Took us out, myself and him. We went out. And he took the movies, and we saw a Western with Randolph Scott. For a lot of you out there who don't know Randolph Scott, he was in great movies. He was in the, matter of fact, he was in one of the biggest fight scenes ever in the movies called The Spoilers. Him and John Wayne fought for about 10 minutes. And they made a couple of more movies where they almost were the same characters practically. I think they made about 3 of them together. But anyway, after the movie, Tad's Steakhouse. Now, you got a picture of New York City. Restaurants galore. But Tad's Steakhouse, which was about a block and a half from the movie theater, because we took the train down there. You know, you don't need to drive. We go anywhere in New York City with train. And in the window, they used to cook the steaks on charcoal pits and hickory pits. In the window, you could look in the window. The window maybe was about 30 feet long or 40 feet long. They had 20 steaks on the grill, and they were grilling them right there. I mean, you're talking about 16-ounce steaks. I mean, these were huge steaks, 18-ounce. And he said, all right, we're going in here. Went in there. The guy put a steak on my plate that was as big as my plate. Nothing else could fit on the plate. Then he gave me another plate with mashed potato, with a baked potato with sour cream with the work on it. And then I had a chocolate shake. And I ate every bit of that steak. Every bit of that steak. And why I remember this was that was one of them. But he used to take me to Tad's Steakhouse. That was my thing with him. And when we came home walking down the street, I had a big surprise. It was about 30 kids in my yard waiting for me to say happy birthday. Cousins I hadn't seen in a long time. My cousin across the street I see every day, and my cousin Marilyn, his sister, and uncles, and saying happy birthday. And I remember that was my 10th birthday. I can still see what I was wearing. I can, you know, and back in those days, you went to a birthday party, you dressed up. You did not go there with baggy. First of all, we didn't wear sneakers. The only time you wore sneakers, if you were playing ball, basketball, football, baseball, you did not wear sneakers. You had shoes. You had shoes. And I always wore a tie. Always. Always wore a tie. And it was just unbelievable. It was my favorite birthday. And then I remember also my grandfather, who lived in, we had a three family house. He lived on the first floor. We had the second and third floors. But anyway, he used to take me to the circus. My
my uncle, my father's brother, who lived across the street, he would come and he would go with me and my grandfather to the circus. That was their present to me. We used to go with what they called the promenade. And that was before the circus started. And we used to go backstage and we used to play the, we used to see them, the acts warming up and them feeding the elephants and it was fabulous. But that was my birthday. We're going to talk more about that next week. But right now what I have for you, I want you to listen to something.
Step further, hurry, hurry, before the show begins, my friends. Stand in line, get your tickets, I hope you will not miss. It'll only cost you 50 cents to see.
Got our own commercials in that song. I mean, that's unbelievable. Hey, Blue Magic, one of my favorites. And guess what? We have on the phone right now is Mr. Richard Pratt from Blue Magic. Richard.
Michael, how are you?
How are you?
Doing great. Great hearing your voice again.
It's great hearing you all the time. And I understand that you have something that you like to say to the listening audience.
Well, I just want to mention that Blue Magic is here in North Carolina at E&I Studios, and we're doing some studio work as we talk. And while we're in town, we were here for a couple of days. We'll probably be here till Monday. And we would like to come out to the Charlotte area to one of the venues and just, you know, meet and greet. Tonight would be a great time. And just, you know, kind of get together with some of the people here in Charlotte at one of the nicer clubs.
Well, what I want to do is I want to announce that on the air that tonight at 9 o'clock you will be able to see Blue Magic at Club Celeb at 445 West Trade Street in Charlotte, uptown.
That's fantastic, Michael. Sounds fantastic.
Everybody who loves Blue Magic needs to come out tonight at 9 o'clock at 445 West Trade Street. And it's not going to be a sideshow. It's going to be a show. And how did you get together, or what was the idea of getting together with the group here in Charlotte? Where are you located at? Where's E&I Studios at?
E&I Studios is in Troy, North Carolina.
Oh, Troy, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Troy. Well, what happened was my partner in the studio is Ben Dodge, and why not, you know, record the guys here at the studio? And the guys were, you know, very nice to come on out, and we, you know, we fellowship a lot, and so you know, just a wonderful thing that we had a place for us to come to as we work, and you know, from time to time we stay at each other's homes while we're on the road, you know, taking care of this. So this time it just happened to be my time here in North Carolina, and we're here for a week, and then we've got a show in Philadelphia. The 3rd of May, the 10th of May will be in Connecticut, Stamford, and then the 17th will be in Hempstead, New York. So we've got, I'll just list those three, but those are the kind of things that are happening. And while we were here, we decided, excuse me, to give you a call, since you and I go back a ways, and we've done some things together. I wanted to give you a call and see if you can, you know, just coordinate a situation where we can all come together, meet some of the promoters, meet some of the folks that live here in Charlotte, and just kind of reunite with the fans again.
Well, you know, what we're going to do is tonight when you announce that you guys are going to be doing some stuff, we will set up some stuff so you can come back here and perform at a venue. Maybe tonight they can, you know, con you into singing a few notes for us.
We'll be honored to share a song or two, let our fans know that we're back, just to let our fans know that we're excited to see them and you know, mix it back up again. And, you know, we've got a great team here. The guys that are with me right now in the room is Jimmy Lee, second tenor, and Don Nod Nottingham, who is the first tenor, and then our lead. So having said that, we'll come in, and we'll just have, you know, we'll play it by ear. We'll have fun.
Right.
And we don't mind sharing. You know, we're not so big-headed or whatever that we have to be paid for everything that we do. You know, we like to get back, and we like to have fun. And most of all, we like to let our hair down sometimes. So if anybody else better than yourself to launch this.
Well, hey, I appreciate that, what you're saying. You know, I was looking at some of your great songs, like Stop and Start and Three Ring Circus, which I play a lot on this show because North Carolina is a three ring circus with these moo-moos up there in Raleigh. But the other one is What's Come Over Me, and these songs are 4 minutes long and more. 419, 439. I mean, not many, because these were on 45s, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
I mean, wasn't that kind of long for a 45 back then?
Well, you know, we got to remember, we came on the brink where the music just started getting, the disc just started getting a little bit lengthier, you know. So we kind of came right on that during the 70s, you know, just before disco. You know, the music was just kind of increasing, you know, the time frame just started expanding. So, it was, the song was now 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, generally songs back at that time were maybe, you know, three minutes, 10 seconds.
Yes,
you
2 minutes. I mean, I'm looking at some Cal Tater. He has his song Soul Sauce is only 2 minutes and 19 seconds.
Yeah. And just those things, you know, made you had your radio cut. The radio disc as well as,
that's,
you know.
That's true. That's true.
For those things kind of play into that. But hey, let me let the guys just holler at you for a minute, and so you can get the shout out at them for a moment. I'll let Jimmy say hi to you first.
Yes, go ahead.
Good afternoon, listening audience. My name is Jimmy Lee. I sing second tenor for Blue Magic with Richard Pratt. And it's a joy to see you guys at 9 o'clock tonight. I would appreciate it if everyone would bring a camera so that you can take a photograph with us, and we'll be more than happy to autograph anything that you have. We love you all. Thank you so much. Once again, it's Jimmy Lee from Blue Magic with Richard Pratt.
And I'm going to turn you over to Don.
Hi, my name is Don Nottingham. I want to say thank you for having us on the show, and we're looking forward to coming to Charlotte this evening and have a lot of fun with the fans. I am the first tenor, so it doesn't sound like it. But anyway, we want to put everybody up, and hopefully we'll have a great time and look forward to seeing everyone.
Well, this is going to be at Club Celeb, 445 West Trey Street at tonight, 9 o'clock, and I also want to thank Robin Bradford, who is the chair of the Democratic Party here in Mecklenburg County, where Charlotte is at, for being the primary person that got us all together for tonight.
Wonderful.
And you guys, I understand from Richard, what have the other guys been doing?
What have the other guys been doing? I don't understand the question.
Well, what do the other guys live here in the local area?
Oh, no. I'm the only one from North Carolina. One of the members, Jimmy, is from Longside, New Jersey. One of the fellows is from Long Island, New York. One fellow is from Tucson, Arizona. Way of Connecticut. So we kind of reach out around the globe a little bit, but you know, we've been blessed to come together. We've known each other, you know, a very, very long time. So it's now let me just say this to you, Michael, so our fans will know too. I have established my own group of Blue Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we had talked many times about coming together, but we haven't decided to come together yet. So out of the original members of Blue Magic, we're all living, and maybe that will happen, but we each have great groups, and I am just excited to share mine with Charlotte. And let them be let them make a choice of what they like. And like I said, we'll do a song or two, just having fun. You know, it won't cost you guys nothing. Just come on out and see the sideshow.
Hey. That's always good when it don't cost nothing. That's always good when it don't cost nothing. The other thing that I want to do is play a little bit of one of my favorite songs while you're here.
Thank you. since that day. That's all I can do.
That is one of my favorite songs.
Mine too.
To start all over again. And it's almost amazing that that's what you guys are doing.
Exactly right. It suits the occasion. Hey, look, I'd like to shout out too, you know, for all of the fans and friends. Remember, this is the Easter weekend. This is Good Friday. Let's all be mindful of our blessings and how we've been blessed through the years, how we've just been blessed with our families, our children, our children's children. You know, let's just always put God first in everything that we do. And you can always fellowship, have a wonderful time. Just remember, do things decent and in order.
And, you know, before you guys go, Yeah, you are involved now in gospel. Is that true?
Yes. Now what I did was I took a leave of absence, like you would take a leave from your job or something.
Right.
I took a leave of absence so I can go ahead and do what I'm doing now. That doesn't mean that on Sunday morning I don't get up and sing, you know, some gospel and praise God. Yes, I do that. But I'm also focused and concentrated with my new team to really establish Blue Magic in a new way and just kind of get to places where fans are that we don't have a chance to see. I have a lot of friends in Charlotte over the years that I haven't seen, and this would be just the start of, getting back together with those fans. So tonight will just be the start of us, introducing ourselves once again, and then maybe we can talk with some of the different promoters, and in the future we can come in and just rekindle some of the wonderful experiences that we've had, so we're looking forward to coming in to Charlotte and just having a great time.
Well, I think everybody is going to enjoy seeing you together, see you guys up there or in the audience. If you didn't say a word, they would love to see you guys. I got the, and I still need to get that record from you, that CD, record, what am I saying, record? CD from you.
Yeah, but look, when you say record, I got you. I know what you mean, because I flip sometimes, because we're in another age. Thank God we were blessed to be able to share at all those different avenues. Look, I did want to ask before you go, if you will, make sure that you send me that information expeditiously.
Yes, I will.
And,
we'll talk after 6 o'clock tonight.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. I'll give you a call when the show's over, and then we can do all that together. But 445 West Trade Street in the heart of Charlotte. And you will be able to see Blue Magic.
And Michael, the second thing, some of your listeners could call into you and give us an idea of what songs they would probably like to hear tonight, or what would be the favorite song, and we'll try to accommodate them, and we'll see what one is standing out the most, and we'll try to make sure that we can do that.
Well, I'm going to put my bid in for Three Ring Circus. Right now.
Okay, but that would be a good thing. At least it would give us an idea You know,
that's right.
And again, this is all in fun, okay?
All righty. That is Richard Pratt, Blue Magic, 445 West Trade Street, tonight at 9 o'clock at Club Celeb. And I want to thank you, Richard, for being on. And as a matter of fact, Three Ring Circus, that's how we're going to go out. I'll call you
my
later,
man.
Richard.
My man. All right. Thank you so much. Okay. I press the blue pen.
Yep.
Mississippi. He's just a face painted on a smile, jumping up and down and making people happy. So deep inside the shadow he could let the another know there's a love.
Yes, life is a three-ring circus, and if you're in politics, right now, there is a three-ring circus going on. There's the Democrats, there's the Republicans, and then there's the regressive Tea Party wing. And we have a young man right now who wants to get into that circus. I hope he has a whip, a chain, and a gun. Mr. Curtis Osborne, who is running for North Carolina 12th, is with us on the phone. Curtis, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, Michael?
Tell us, why do you want to get involved in this three-ring circus?
Well, I tell you what, I'm a first-time candidate. The reason I decided to get involved is because I figured I couldn't stand to sit on the sidelines with regard to all the gridlock that's going on in D.C. and what's happening here in the state of North Carolina. I mean, one of the examples is these awful voter suppression laws. I mean, North Carolina right now has the most regressive voter rights laws in the entire country. I've seen over the past several years laws being turned around, people trying to turn the clock back 50 years, and I felt like there's so many hard-won battles that were waged years before me, generations before me, to achieve a lot of things for people all across the country, both for minorities and everybody else, that are now being turned back. And I figured, well, you know, if I've had the opportunities in life to go to school and get an education and do relatively well, I have an obligation also to try to give back. And I see this as a time to give back and not sit on the sidelines. I've been blessed. I'm here.
Go ahead. You finish your thought because I interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I said I've been blessed, you know, so I've got to give back. What I don't want to do and what I would regret is if I didn't get involved, I didn't do anything or make some attempt to wake up 5 or 10 years from now and see that the world I'm living in is a completely different world than what I grew up in. And by that I mean I had opportunities because of the 1964, you know, Civil Rights Act that was put in place, the 1965 Voting Rights Act. There's a lot of stuff that people, more specifically the right-wing Republicans, are trying to incrementally turn around piece by piece until eventually they hope the world's going to be a completely different place here in America. And I felt like I've got to get involved. That way, if things do change, and I try to do my part, I won't have any regrets.
Join us right now is my senior producer, Mr. Thomas Fortenberry. How are things?
Hey, how are you, Mike? Hey, I was absolutely thrilled to hear what he just said. I think it is an obligation, and I'm so glad to see people stepping up because, as we were talking about last week and every week on this show, people who are apathetic or who don't participate in the system as they should are helping these Republicans take away all of our advantages, all of our gains, all of our rights, everything that we strive for. And to see someone like this gentleman step forward and do the right thing to help, you know, the next generation. Like you said, he's had the benefit of those who fought before him, and he needs to do his job now to help preserve it for his children and the next generation. And I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Curtis, tell us a little bit about your background and yourself.
Well, Michael, I grew up poor. I was raised in public housing. A small town called Monroe, right outside of Charlotte, about 25 miles southeast of Charlotte. But I grew up in a loving home. My mom raised me and my sister. I got a good quality education, and that's why I want to make sure all children have an opportunity to get here in America. But I got a good quality education, which gave me the ability
school.
To walk.
Public school was it a public school education?
That's right, quality public school education right here in North Carolina. And as a result of that quality public education, I went off to a military academy for a year and transferred to NC State, where I eventually earned an engineering degree. And during the time that I was there, I enlisted in the Army Reserves eventually served 4 years active, 4 years inactive in the reserves. And I worked as an engineer for a while, and then I went to law school at North Carolina Central University School of Law. After I finished law school, I went back to my hometown of Monroe, and I hung a shingle. I opened up a law firm, and I practiced law there for a little over 2 years. Then I went back to law school and got an advanced law degree at George Washington University. When I finished up there, I opened up a law firm in D.C., and I practiced there for several years doing employment discrimination work for the most part, representing women and racial minorities and people from other countries who were taken advantage of, whose rights were being challenged on the workplace, or at the workplace, rather. And I enjoyed doing that. I worked in the federal courts in D.C., the federal courts of Maryland, and after several years, I moved back to North Carolina and Charlotte. I've been in Charlotte since 2004. I've been back for 10 years now. And I came back here and worked in the area of employment discrimination, and I also do catastrophic injury. But what I've done for the most part, Mike, for the past 15 years is spend my legal career working for people, everyday, hardworking people, because I want to give an opportunity to other people to have a chance in life, you know, that I've had. And I feel like I've got to continue giving back. And I see my serving in Congress as a natural progression of what I've been doing for the past 15 years, and that is working for people.
Well, we have a guy in this state named Brandon who wants to run, and he's a candidate. He said that his idol is Jesse Helms.
Now, Marcus Brandon?
He said his idol is Jesse Helms. How do we get around all this nonsense that's going on, racist nonsense? And I believe the only reason why these people are saying these things is because they know it's the last desperation of a scoundrel. You know, they always say the last desperation of a scoundrel is flag and religion. Well, as soon as these guys start talking about America and putting a flag out and talking about religion, you know they're up to no good. So,
well, Mike,
are you bringing your chair, your whip, and your gun to the table? Because I think you're going to have to do that.
Well, Mike, what it's going to take is hard work. It's going to take hard work. One thing I've done for the past 15 years is I've litigated in court. A lot of times the cases I litigate are cases that are hard fought on both sides. And I've learned you can be opponents and you can be adversaries without necessarily being adversarial. I've also learned that regardless of what your positions are, usually there's something in the middle. And if people work hard and they focus their attention, you can usually find some sort of common ground.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike. I thought I was losing.
Okay. No. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So what I'll bring to the table, Mike, is discipline, hard work, focus, and determination.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what are we down? 16 or 15 in the House? In the House now?
What's that, Mike?
Well, are we down with 15 or 16 in the House now?
Right.
Okay. So I believe, and before I ask you any questions, I believe that there are a lot of people who are getting hurt by this regressive government that has come in power, and the only reason why they are is because they did not vote. What is your position with some of these people now who, and I'll stake it. I say it's Senator Kay Hagan. She is really on the fence with Obamacare or the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. What is your position on that?
On the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
I support the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. That's the full name. I support it 100%. I think we've got to have affordable care. We've got to have health insurance coverage for everybody in this country. Because quite frankly, when you don't have it ends up costing more money. When you've got people who are in the system who don't have coverage, who can't afford to go to the doctor and get regular checkups and keep their health, you know, where it should be, then they wait until there's some sort of dire emergency or their health has crumbled before they eventually go in and get some health care, and that's usually through the emergency room. And we all know that that's a whole lot more expensive than going to a primary care physician on a regular basis for maintenance checkups and keeping your body in shape. So I think, you know, we don't need to have a country full of people who can't afford to have insurance, who don't have insurance, and who have to wait until they're nearly dead before they go into the hospital, into the ER, which will end up costing taxpayers a whole lot more money. We've got too many people in this country who are one major sickness away from catastrophe, one major sickness away from financial ruin. That's just we've got it here, and now many people who've signed up for Obamacare don't have to worry about that. They don't have to worry about being caught in the gap between not having health insurance and not being old enough to qualify for Medicare. It's done a lot of people a lot of good. I mean, you hear people talk about some of what they consider bad about Obamacare, but you don't hear a lot of people or enough people talking about all the positive things. There are a lot of people out there whose premiums have come down substantially, and they're getting the health care coverage they need and deserve. You have some people who've complained about losing their health insurance as a result of Obamacare. But what they don't say, or perhaps what some of them don't even realize, is that coverage they can no longer have because the coverage wasn't actually providing sufficient coverage. And you know, the law says if you've got coverage and it's not sufficient, then if it's not sufficient, then what you've got to do is you've got to step it up. Because there are too many health insurance companies that are out there selling health insurance, collecting premiums from people who just truly are not truly providing reasonable health care. And people don't find that out until they get sick, until they really need the coverage. And they find out what they have is really a shame more than anything else. But I support Obamacare 100%.
You know, and the thing is that we have these hospitals now, these large conglomerate hospitals that are eating up the smaller hospitals and changing the fundamentally how people get emergency care. And I'll give you, for instance, this clown, Rush Limbaugh, is out in California at some private hospital getting a bionic ear, because, you know, he's deaf. So the thing is, that, the guy that was taking his place was saying that, oh, the reason why he's there and not in his place in Florida is because that none of the hospitals take cash. You have to have health insurance. Now, this is the lie that's being spread. You keep that. He's absolutely correct. You can't go in there with $5,000 for an operation. Here's my money. I mean, drug dealers will do that because they have no credit cards. They don't want any paper trace. But the hospital will bill you, and then you can pay it. But see, what they're saying is that if you don't have health insurance, you can't see a doctor. But what these large hospitals are doing, they're eating up the smaller hospitals and making it more difficult for people to get emergency care. Now, what would you do? And I don't know how it can be stopped. I mean, it's just like we're going to be, you know, you have these big conglomerates that are eating up all the telephone companies. And so you'll have fewer and fewer telephone companies, just like Time Warner and Comcast are wanting to combine. And that's going to reduce how much, realistically, how much availability will be and what we can see on our television. What do you think is done? Go ahead.
I was actually just going to say it reduces competition all the way around, but that's just the nature of business. Business always wants to aggregate, you know, and get bigger. That's just a side effect of conglomerates to begin with. But one thing I wanted to say that I think he touched on that's very important is that even with this law, it's a brand new law. It's not done, so to speak. There's room to tweak anything in the future, and we can fix things. We can add to it. We can make it better. You know, people forget when Social Security first came out, it wasn't as robust as it is now. It didn't cover as much. When the GI Bill first came out, it was actually only for high school students and only for a year. You know, and then it was expanded slowly to include all vets. It was like a little stopgap, you know. But these things get better as you see the need and you see how it works in the real world, and you can fix and tweak and make it a robust viable law for everyone. But the point is progress.
That's
and
right.
What gets my, you know, what bothers me so much is, like you were talking about just a minute ago, Mike, this candidate whose entire platform is, I want to be like Jesse Helms.
Yes.
Okay, why do we want to go back? I don't care who it is. That's like anything saying, you know, I want to be like, you know, the 18th century.
Not
I want
great.
To be like the, you know, why do you want to go backwards? I want to progress. You know, I want to go forward. I don't want society to go backwards. So
that's
I don't understand that entire, there's a whole like movement out there to somehow regress America back to the, you know, the good old days, which never existed, but, you know, some kind of fabled founding fathers, good old times that didn't exist. Why do we want to do that?
I think what we have to do is we have to embrace the fact that the country is changing. I mean, you know, we're all from other countries, except for those people who are Native Americans or who's from a lineage
right.
of Native Americans. Otherwise, we're from some other place in the world, and we've all come here, and we've combined to make this a great country. And so why not accept the fact and embrace the fact that the country is changing, and it will continue to change, and we all need to just work with what we have instead of trying to focus on what the past held. So I agree with you 100%. We need to focus on moving forward and progressing and not regressing.
Well, what are three? Just give us a short three or a short two of the main things that you would like to see get done if you were able to do that.
The main things I'd like to see get done?
Yes.
Well, the first thing I'd like to see get done, Mike, involves voting rights. I mean, you know, back in June of last year, the Supreme Court issued a ruling that basically gutted the 1965 Civil Rights Act, I mean the 1965 Voting Rights Act. It held that Section 4 was inapplicable because their position was, well, demographics have changed over the past 49 or 50 years, and therefore we can't say that Section 4 works. Well, I think it still works, and it was working when they said it was no longer applicable. But what they did was they gutted the Voting Rights Act, and as soon as they did that, a lot of states moved very, very quickly. The General Assembly moved quickly to change the laws with regard to voting rights, and North Carolina was on that list. And we have, as I said earlier, the most regressive, most restrictive voting rights laws in the entire country, not voting rights, voter suppression laws in the entire country. I mean, what we have now are, instead of having 17 days of early voting, we have only 10 days of early voting. Instead of being able to register and vote on the same day, you can't do it. And you can't vote on Sundays anymore. You know, we used to have what's called souls to the polls, as you know. You go to church, and the preacher says, look, you need to make sure you vote today during early voting. People could leave church, and if they weren't registered, they could get registered and then vote that very same day. Well, now not only can you not register and vote on the same day, you can't vote on Sunday. You know,
right.
16- and 17-year-olds used to be able to pre-register when they get their driver's license. You can't do that now. You know, and those folks, if they did that, they were more likely to vote when they turned 18. We all know that. I mean, so many things have changed, and, of course, beginning in 2016, you got to have, you know, your driver's license. You got to have a government-issued photo ID, and that's going to be problematic. And studies have shown that all of these changes that have taken place have a disproportionate impact on the working class and on racial minorities, and it's just not right. And we know that overwhelmingly, those folks are typically part of the great Democratic Party. You know, the Democratic Party includes a great cross-section of the entire country and not just one small bunch of people who only represent a very small percentage of the people.
Yeah, regional.
One thing also, Mike, to bring out another aspect to this to show how disingenuous it is. Because one of their arguments about the voting rights thing is with voting, they said, we need IDs. And what's wrong with IDs? Everybody has IDs. You know, you just got to know who you're voting, you know, who's actually there.
That's right.
But at the, in the same breath, if that was the argument, that would be one thing. It would be like, oh, well, you got a point. You got to have a driver's license to drive. Maybe you have to have one to vote, you know, whatever. But at the same time, they have actively spent millions upon millions of dollars and done everything from filibusters to voting against to everything else to stop any kind of voter ID or, I mean, photo ID with gun sales anywhere in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, they say if you have to show an ID to buy a gun, it's a violation of your rights. But on the other side of their mouth, they say to vote, you better have three forms of ID and show up, you know.
Right.
So, again, it just proves that it's a disingenuous argument. It's only to suppress vote rather than to aid vote.
Yeah, well, they
go,
go ahead, Chris.
It tends to scare people away. You know, sometimes, you know, people think they're going to be asked for driver's licenses. Some people are less likely to want to go because it's like, well, you know, why are people asking for my driver's license? You know, what's behind that? People think that there may be something else behind the quest for a look at their driver's license. And some people, quite frankly, you've got people who are older, who are on fixed incomes, and who were born in other states thousands of miles away, and they can't afford, and they don't have the ability to go back to their home state and jump through all the hoops that would be necessary in order to get a driver's license or a birth certificate so that they could get a driver's license. So there are a lot of people who've literally voted for decades who are going to not be able to vote as a result of this new law, this photo ID law.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
We have there's another clown running, and he's from, I don't want to say whose state he's from, but it's Mississippi. His name is Chris McDaniel. And Chris McDaniel said this. He said, welfare-dependent citizens of New Orleans, and that is including black and white, decide to stay in the city rather than leave. That's why they're dead. Now,
wow.
How does something like this run for office and say this and say, yes, he said they knew the hurricane was approaching. He said the majority of the residents in either of those towns had the probability they needed and the countless warning and evacuations, but decided to stay there. So
right.
It's their fault.
Hey, Mike, it's more that it's you're poor because you deserve to be poor or you choose to be poor. That's
yeah,
more that
yeah,
same
yeah.
argument. You know, you right. died because you chose to die. You know.
Right.
Now, Curtis, I wanted to ask you, in cases like this, and you were just talking about it, about the ID, how do people get an ID if the building was destroyed, like in Franklin County, and all records are destroyed? How do people ever get their records to vote then?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, there are all kinds of situations that make it difficult for people to get, you know, a government-issued photo ID. I mean, another example, what about people who were delivered by midwives, especially those delivered by midwives in other states? There's a lot of times there's no documentation with regard to their birth, and it just makes it difficult. And there are a lot of people who are struggling right now who are trying to beat the clock to get, you know, get some sort of proof with regard to their birth and the place and that sort of thing so that they can eventually get a government-issued photo ID. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard against a lot of people. So, you know, we've got a couple of lawsuits going on right now in North Carolina, and hopefully, you know, we'll win those and we can change some of these laws. But I think the easiest way, the simplest way of changing the laws in the states is to pass an amendment, pass a bill that amends the 1965 Voting Rights Act to make it really clear what the full intent of Congress was when they passed the law back in 1965 and have it specifically address Section 4 and Section 5 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. So there won't be any question with regard to the meaning of the law and the validity of the law, and then it'll make all of these issues in the states moot. You know, including North Carolina's laws.
But do you think with this regressive Congress, this would ever come to pass if we don't take it over? If people don't get out,
I think you have a good point. I think we've got to. So that's why people have to vote. You know, I tell people, if you don't take advantage of your right to vote, you can't complain when bad things happen. You know, there are a lot of people,
right?
You know, whose parents always voted, who've gotten some education. People like me of my generation who've gotten a good job and they started making some decent money, and they've kind of forgotten where they've come from. A lot of people have, you know, they no longer appreciate the reality of what happens when you vote and when you don't vote. It's like they think about only themselves. They're making decent money. They're living in a decent home. They get a couple of decent vacations every year, and they've kind of forgotten about the struggles. They've forgotten about the people who made sacrifices, both black and white, and Asian and Indian in this country, people who died, people who truly, you know, marched and did so much so that we could have the ability to move forward, especially people like me who grew up poor. I mean, you know, we don't want this country to become a caste system where you're born poor and you always will be poor. We want it to be what it is and what it was. And when I was growing up, and that's a system where even if you grow up poor, you have the opportunity to do better in life. You have an opportunity to make yourself a better person. If you're willing to get an education, if you're willing to be disciplined, if you're willing to focus your energy, you can make yourself a better person, and you can make your life better. And that's what I did. But people don't appreciate that. And what's going to happen is, and what I should say is, what will continue to happen is the rich are going to get richer, and the poor will get poorer, and they'll continue squeezing the middle class until it becomes non-existent. And this country will eventually become, worst-case scenario, just like so many other countries, where you have the super rich and the super poor and no middle class, no in-between. And it's going to be a much bigger struggle to bring this country back to where it is now if the true fight starts then rather than now.
Well, you know, you went into – go ahead, Thomas, go ahead.
Oh no! I was going to say now you're fighting to preserve something rather than if it's already to the point of a oligarchy, a hierarchy, or a dictatorship, and then you're having to overthrow it. That's a totally one is a new revolution, and one is simply nailing the poster back up that fell off the wall. You know, I mean, there's a very big difference between fixing things and rebuilding or building anew.
That's right.
And one thing I wanted to say about this, Mike, to touch on something you said earlier and what he just said with the lack of mobility. I mean, that's what this country was founded on. Remember, this was a push back against the hierarchy. They had this whole caste system, basically, you call it that. But anyway, coming out of the Middle Ages in Europe, where it was all nobility. You know, it's all titles and family. And
that's
you
right.
Either were a have or a have not. You were literally forever either a worker or you were a owner of said lands that you worked. So this was a pushback for the open democracy with mobility where everybody could be anything they chose to be and rise to any level. And one thing about money that you touched on earlier, a perfect example, you have a millionaire like Rush Limbaugh, wants to go get an operation. He can take off from work. He can get on jets or on his own, fly across the country, find the most excellent doctor, and then show up and pay in cash and get a bionic ear.
That's right.
Poor people don't have that luxury. They can't do things like that. And to say that, you know, just because you're poor, you don't deserve health care, because you can't afford to fly around the country and get a good doctor and pay him cash, or that you deserve to die in a flood, is just absolutely it's immoral, it's reprehensible, and it's un-American in its core. You know, have that be a reality is repulsive to everything that we should be doing. And that's exactly why we need these laws.
Sorry.
We know the reason that is Ronald Reagan, you know, is the one that said and created the ability for people to go to the emergency room and not being able to pay. He said if they aren't able to pay, you still have to treat them. They are trying to get rid of that law. They're trying to get rid. And that's why I asked before about these small hospitals, because these small hospitals can't afford not to get paid by the people that come in. And therefore, positioned to be eaten up by the bigger hospital that has all the pharmaceutical and has all the money in the world to withstand a few people that come in and can't pay.
Right. Well, and again, Mike, this gets back to privatization versus public. When there is public functions like healthcare or education in America, everybody's treated equally, okay? When it's all private, it's for the enrichment of a single corporation or entity. And that's when they're fighting tooth and nail now to get all these things thrown out, because they've been saying for a long time, well, you can't force a church to educate, you know, children of gay people. That's just against their religion. Or you can't force them to have a private hospital treat a person if they don't want to, right? That's a private business. It's for profit. But if everything is that way, then they can turn away anybody they want for any reason.
Right.
They can just say it's my moral reason or my money reason or whatever, you know. They don't like the way you look.
Yes.
This world will quickly become, you know, much like those science fiction movies you watch where the rich and powerful are on the inner city or in the inner city, and then all the people who are poor, the millions of people who are poor are on the outskirts, far outside the city, you know, basically surviving.
Well, you know, they just came out, I think it was a Thursday, that the new statistics are that the CEOs have made, the average CEO, I should say, has made between $11.7 billion in raises. In the last 5 years. In the last 5 years, for the minimum wage person, they make only $15,000. How do you have such a drastic change and they still say, well, you know, you don't need a wage increase? I just was sick the other 2 weeks ago, and I had to go to the emergency room. I had a viral infection. I went there. They had to give me a bag of fluid. The doctor came in for 5 minutes and said, you'll be all right. The nausea will go away. Your stomach will be fine. He said, we don't know what it is, but we had about 6 or 8 people in here a week like this. I got the bill from the hospital. It was $2,999. Now, hey, I'm not paying any of it. I have insurance that pays for it. But what does the person who can't pay for that, how do they pay for that? And in these small hospitals, they're not going to get paid.
Right.
And therefore, they're getting eaten up.
And what happens, Mike, they can't pay.
No, they can't pay. There's no way.
No, they can't pay.
They can't pay.
Right, this is what I was trying to say is, how can we change this? Or is the change that everybody needs to have the ACA? We got 19 different states, red states, who refuse to take the ACA. Here in North Carolina, there are over 500,000 people that do not have insurance. 50,000 of those people are going to die in the next 2 years.
Right, it's shameful.
So
you know, we turned away money. We turned away, you know, federal dollars that could have expanded Medicare here in North Carolina, and it would have benefited an additional, you know, 500,000 families. That money was turned away. So, you know, you get and it wasn't just turned away like nobody got it. It was turned away and it was sent to other states that said, okay, I'll take that money. But the bottom line is, you know, the people here in North Carolina, the taxpayers still pay taxes. So we're responsible for helping to pay now for additional money towards the health care of people in other states, simply because, you know, the folks here wanted to turn the money away.
That's well, right.
And it's like being robbed because you've already paid the taxes.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Correct.
So there's no equity in that. That's
right. So Curtis, now, you are not a name that has been bantied around and beat up and thrown all over and people know you for years. You're injecting a new, fresh blood look at what needs to be done. And where can people get a hold of you? On the website,
well,
or phone cover,
yeah.
If they want to help you, how can they do that?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. People can get more information about the campaign at the website. The website is www.osborneforcongress. That's the number 4, osborneforcongress.com. And that's OSBORNE, the number 4, CONGRESS, osborneforcongress.com. If people want to volunteer and come out and help, you know, help with the struggle, help with the movement, if people want to help support the vision that I have, you know, they can call the campaign office, 704-817-7144. Again, that's 704-817-7144. We've got to make some changes here in North Carolina and throughout the country, and it's going to take people, you know, who want to make the sacrifice, who are willing to stand up for other people and not just themselves, who are willing to look out for the whole. You know, I always say, I talk about progressive democratic values, and I point those out, you know, when I go places, you know, and that includes, you know, fairness, justice, equality, community, and responsibility. And I tell people that that's responsibility for oneself, but also responsibility for each other. And nowadays, we've got to put a little bit more focus on responsibility for each other, and every man needs to stop. You know, people shouldn't just focus on themselves. We got to focus on the betterment of the whole, because the whole is better. Everyone's better.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the website here, and who's the gentleman standing next to you?
That would be President Obama.
Oh, President, you just happened to meet him on the subway or a bus? How did you say?
Well, you know, I've met the president twice. I met him first when he was a junior senator out of Illinois running for the Democratic nomination for president, and that was in Charlotte back in I believe 2007 when he was in that race with about 10 other Democrats. I met him at a fundraiser, and I tell you, when he walked in the room, it was to me it was and I went in there not necessarily supporting him. At the time, because I really didn't know him well, I just heard his name only a relatively short period of time prior to my actually meeting him. But I'll tell you this: when he walked into the room, it was like a spiritual awakening almost. I mean, he has a presence about him that I associate with spirituality. Great man, and he did as we all know, eventually did become the nominee for the Democratic Party and eventually president. But that particular picture you see there on the website is a picture that I took with him down in Atlanta after he spoke at Morehouse College inauguration. That was a picture there at a fundraiser. I went there and I enjoyed that shot. I enjoyed speaking with him. And also, there's a picture on the Facebook.
I was afraid to mention. There's
yeah.
Another picture of you, another person that seems to be familiar. Who is this person?
Well, the one on my Facebook is Andy Young, Andrew Young, former ambassador,
yes.
Andrew Young out of Atlanta, Georgia. But if you're looking at the website, there's a picture on there with me and Harry Reid, and there's one with me and Nancy Pelosi.
That's what I was talking about, Harry. That's who I was talking about, Harry Reid.
Harry Reid is a great man. He really cares about the people. His heart's in the right place. He loves America and he loves the American people, and he works every day to do what he can to make the lives better for everybody in America.
Well, it seems like you're in the soup with a bunch of people that know how to swim and have their own boat. So I think you're doing pretty good for someone that just happened to be passing by.
Yeah, well, I think I've been fortunate. I work hard. I care for the people. Like I said, I'm from humble beginning. You know, I know what it's like to want something and not have it. You know, right. I know what it's like, you know, to you know, not have it. I'll give you one example. When I was in undergrad, I remember one semester I had to drop a class, and it put me below the minimum number of hours you're supposed to have to qualify as a full-time student. So the following semester, I didn't qualify for any sort of grant or loan, so I had to work more hours than I ordinarily work during the week when I was in engineering school. And I survived an entire semester on iced tea and Rice-A-Roni. And some people don't believe that. I lost like 15 pounds that semester. And I remember coming home for Thanksgiving, and I was, and people thought I was sick because I had lost so much weight. But that goes back to my focus and my drive. My goal was to get through that semester, and you know, whatever it took, I was going to get through that semester, and I got through it. Now I made sure I kept my hours up so that I didn't have to do that again. But I gave that as an example of the kind of person I am. You know, I want to take that same drive, that same passion, that same determination to Congress and work on behalf of the people in the 12th Congressional District.
Well, I see you're with somebody else that will probably be the Speaker of the House if we can take it back again, Ms. Nancy Pelosi. I see that picture.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi, I met her out in San Francisco, and I met her when we were lobbying. You know, you know, we lobby a lot. I'm a member of different organizations, legal organizations, that fight on behalf of people, to work for people. You know, one is the North Carolina, you know, Advocates for Justice. And that's a legal organization of lawyers who really push and strive to make sure that the people of North Carolina are protected and taken and not taken advantage of. I'm on the Board of Governors, actually, for that organization.
Before you get off that, I need to talk to you about something that's happening in Franklin County that you might be probably not aware of, but I'll talk to you about that after off the air. But
okay.
Go on, tell us.
Yeah, and when I took that particular picture with Nancy Pelosi, that was during a lobbying event where members of the National Lawyers, AAJ, American Association for Justice, which is a group of national lawyers who come together to fight and fight for the rights of individuals in America and try to protect, you know, people's rights and make sure people aren't taken advantage of and their rights aren't abridged. We yearly will go to Capitol Hill and lobby members of Congress to make sure they're aware of the things that need to be done to protect the American people. And during one lobbying event, there was a reception, and I did get an opportunity to meet Nancy Pelosi. But the focus is to do right by the people. We've got to do right by the people. We can't live on this earth and think about only self and focus on only enriching ourselves. There are a lot of people who just they want to collect as many toys as possible and not worry
right.
about anybody but themselves. We simply can't do that. We've got to take care of the whole.
Well, I you have a lot that you could just the chop down this tree. You're going to have to, I don't know where you're going to start, because this tree is huge and it needs to be chopped down, because what we're doing in Congress is a completely disgusting use of American governorship. It's governance. It's just outrageous what they're doing. And I hope that you will be able to get in there and straighten out some of these people, which, you know, just don't leave your house without your whip, chair, and gun.
Well, I think it's going to take a lot of dialogue. I think you know, people need to be able to sit down and dine together and, you know, and spend time together and get to know each other. And I think it'll make life a lot simpler. It'll make work easier for people on the Hill. Right now, I don't think there's very much time for people on the Hill to actually spend time getting to know each other, especially if they're not of the same, you know, party affiliation. I mean, people need to be able to.
I don't know if we can say that you're an ideologue, but you're absolutely correct. That's what they used to do. But we have people run for Congress like this fool McDaniel who want to destroy the government. They don't want government, even though they're working for it. They want to destroy and rebuild it in their own image, like this guy out in Arizona, New Mexico, that thinks the government doesn't exist. I mean, how do you get across to people what you said when the first day the President of the United States was elected, they were saying, we're going to make him a one-termer. I mean,
right.
You know, you're trying to talk to people who don't want to listen. Their thing is, hey, it's our way or the highway.
That's true. But you know, usually people who are extremists, you think eventually if the voters are properly educated, and that's what we've got to do. We've got to take the responsibility of educating the voters. But if the voters are properly educated, they know who to vote for and who not to vote for, and we can get some of these people out of office. And for those who are going to be supported with people of like mind, then I think eventually they become isolated, and they are an island of themselves, and nobody listens to what they have to say. But the key is, I think, educating as many voters as possible across the country so we have fewer of people like that who are considered extremists, who just don't want to listen and who have their own ways and don't want to take into consideration anybody else's ways or who won't even, you know, consider a compromise. With those people, I think the system will get rid of most of them, but those that the system won't get rid of just naturally will, I think, eventually isolate themselves or be isolated by the voters and by the system as a whole.
Well,
I think the key is educating the voters.
Hey, Mike, let me just say one thing. I'm absolutely furious with voter apathy because voters allow this to happen when they don't vote.
That's right.
All of these things we're talking about would not happen at all in any kind of functional system unless people don't show up to participate. And a prime example of this is, this fool out in Arizona, you know, I mean, there's so many examples, but this fool in Arizona running for office, this GOP candidate who, ironically enough, named James Brown.
Yeah.
So this guy recently said that, now he was trying to woo, this is even better, he's trying to woo black voters.
Yes.
And he said that they need to quit making such a deal about slavery because slavery was a good system. And it treated slaves wonderfully. It gave them free homes, everything else, and they all worked for the betterment of the system. And the only downside of it was they just weren't allowed to advance into management. But they didn't beat them. They didn't anything. They all stayed around because they had such a good cush deal.
Yeah,
now, the only way ever that someone like that in this day and age could even have a podium, much less an office, is if people don't show up to vote, because it's the most, you know, regressive, asinine, uneducated comments I've ever heard, yet they're out there still viable candidates. And if you don't vote for the other side, that guy de facto wins no matter what you do. And then this guy literally is preaching the joys of good old slavery, you know?
Right.
I mean,
right.
And people have got to wake up. They've got to participate.
Well,
because
yeah,
if you don't, you know,
yeah, you're right. And I think what people need to understand is when they don't vote, those people who are apathetic and who don't go out and take advantage of the right to vote, and it's a right, those who don't vote need to understand that by not voting, they are indirectly voting. They're indirectly voting for somebody that other people want to vote for. So they,
every time they don't vote, they nullify your vote.
That's right. And they have no place to complain, no reason, no place to complain. They can't do it. I think you have people who, like I said, who are starting to, you know, make some money. Make, you know, they live a comfortable lifestyle, and they don't necessarily see the immediate necessity to vote because it's not they don't see their lives being in an emergency situation, so they don't care. But when things start happening that have a bigger impact on their lives, they can feel and see every day that affects their kids and their kids' education and has a big impact on their wallets, then they'll take notice and they'll realize, okay, they should have been voting long before whenever they start voting and they start taking notice. But you got those kinds of folks, and then you got the folks, quite frankly, who just are so busy trying to survive that they don't get around to voting. Now, I don't think that's a real big excuse, but there are a lot of people who work day and night, people who work full-time jobs and part-time jobs, who are just trying to survive. And the sad thing is their lives are impacted more so than the lives of many other people because they're the poor, and a lot of times they're the voiceless. And not voting, it puts them in a situation where they remain voiceless.
Right. Well, that's the people who they target with
his shoulder. Hello?
They do try to make it inconvenient.
That's right.
Well, yeah. Well, if you're working two jobs, when are you going to get a chance to vote? I mean, have the example in Hampton, Hamilton, Ohio. They closed all the precincts in the neighborhood, in the inner city, to the point now is that people have to travel 1.5 hours by public transportation to the closest voting precinct. That's 3 hours. There's over 41,000 households in Hamilton County in Ohio, 3 hours round trip now to vote.
How is that even legal?
I have no idea. The states control it, I imagine.
But, you know, getting back to what you were asking, Mike, you know, when do those folks vote? People who work those long hours, typically they take advantage of voting, I've seen, on Saturdays during early voting. For those who can squeeze in, you know, on Saturdays. But, you know, you've got working mothers who are working, you know, full-time, part-time jobs, taking care of children, running to get children from daycare. A lot of times they don't have a chance to vote. But we've got to do it, you know. We've got to do it. That's why we've got to protect it. You know, those early voting dates. We've got to protect the number of hours that the polls are open. We've just got to, you know, continue educating the masses because that's you know, we've got to continue educating the masses so people do get out and take advantage of the right to vote and protect themselves and protect their own rights. I tell people, if you don't vote, you begin to lose your voice. And if you begin to lose your voice, you lose other rights. And then you wake up one day
Tell us what the when the early vote starts. And everybody knows, you know, people don't understand that the primaries that you are now involved with are the most important time to vote. Not after the fact in November, because the person that you should have voted for in the primary didn't get elected.
That's right. And
so
a lot of
the
times,
primary
if you don't vote,
is more important than the general.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of times, if you don't vote, you don't get the best person of your party who needs to be out there fighting. And in some situations where you end up having a weak person in your party move forward and get beat, you know, that's always a possibility too, simply because you didn't take the time to evaluate the different candidates and go out and make an informed, you know, choice, informed vote.
When is voting start?
Early voting starts next Thursday, the 24th of April, and it goes through Saturday, May 3rd, and the primary itself is on Tuesday, May 6th.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. You have heard when you need to put aside. Now, here in North Carolina, what's the voting requirement to vote?
Well, the requirements haven't changed here in North Carolina. With regard to the photo ID, government-issued ID, that starts in 2016. However, what they will be doing, a lot of places, is asking people if they have a driver's license. But if you don't need one, and if you don't have one, you can still vote. You still take advantage of the right to vote. But a lot of people might not realize that, and a lot of people might become intimidated by it. But we've got to make people aware. Look, they may ask you for your driver's license, but even if they do, please understand you don't have to have your driver's license to vote. They cannot turn you away. And quite frankly, they're supposed to tell people that.
Yes, yes. Well, I am so glad I finally got a hold of you to have you come on. And realistically, I don't think we've had anybody on the show that's talked this in depth about voting before. And to show you how much Curtis Armstrong is involved with your vote, you can go further by going on his website. And give us that website address again, Curtis.
It's www.IWasBornForCongress.com. That's the number 4. And, I've got several, you know, short videos up on YouTube. One dealing with voting rights. I've got one dealing with for equal work, you know, because women should be getting paid the same as men for doing the exact same work. There's no reason to pay them less.
Right.
And I did like a 30-minute interview with Paul Brown. So, you know, that's up on YouTube also. But we've got some good stuff up. You know, if people want to see what additional information we have on Facebook, they can, you know, they can reach out and send me a friend request on Facebook. That Facebook profile is Curtis Osborne Congressional Candidate. So if they send me a request, we'll accept, and then you can come on, and we've got all kinds of good information on there also.
Now, let's tell them, what's a phone number if they want to contact your campaign?
That number, I'd love to have people come out and help us out, especially with working the polls during the early voting, but the telephone number is 704-817-7144. And again, that's 704-817-7144.
And I would like to thank you for coming on, and I want to hear from you again before the early vote starts. You can come on again and talk some more about some other stuff that you want to get done.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you, too.
Curtis Armstrong for North Carolina District 12. We need to have somebody that's going to protect your vote in Congress, and it looks like it could be Curtis Osborne.
Yeah, I love his passion.
Facebook him. Call his campaign headquarters and get it done immediately. All right, thank you, Curtis.
Thank you. New voice, new perspective, fresh blood.
Thank you.
And remember, this will be online archived if you need any excerpts or want to hear it again.
That's right. It will be archived. So tell us, I got all this full plate of stuff I'm going to be talking about today, and, you know, to remind us. And I wanted to play it, but I wanted to everybody to hear what the what was going on with Curtis, and here are some of the things that, I don't want to play that, that's too long. There are things that need to be said about your health care program. And we have a president who is sitting there now saying what he can say, and people have nothing left but to, what's the old saying, Thomas, that Captain Kirk said to Khan, when Khan said he was going to get rid of him, Kirk said, "I'm laughing at your superior intellect." Well, this is what
right.
Obama's doing now to these Tea Party people about health care. He says, "I'm laughing."
How do you like those 8 million people?
How do you like those 8 million people? And how do you like what now has been a major, major, major turn in healthcare? I mean, it's just these guys, you know, what do they do now? Tell me, what do they do now? I mean, Thomas,
well,
can you tell
the thing,
me?
The thing was, even at the beginning, the only thing they were doing, people forget. I mean, they made great hay out of it. They have a great machine that churned it out 24/7, but the base of it was that they had a rough week rolling out a website. I mean, that was the whole complaint. It wasn't that, you know, anything else was going on. They just kept saying, "Oh, look, a failure. The site didn't load quick enough the first day. You know, there was lag time." I mean, if that was the complaint, to begin with, it was a farce. You know, we talked about that.
Farce.
We get more updates per day from Microsoft just on everyday software.
I turned on my machine this morning. I had 7 updates that had to be done. 7.
Right.
I still haven't had time to do it.
I mean, heck, Facebook gives me more updates every month. I mean, come on. You know, if these... You know, I mean, if these things are, it's just everyday service, but that's what they did. They, you know, they made hay of it. They laughed all the way. You know, they were ramming it to him. Oh, your website didn't roll out right. You know, it wasn't fast enough. It was clogging up because you had millions of people on it at once or whatever. Well, you know, okay, fine. We still got it done. So now what do you got to say? I mean, they got nothing to say.
Now what do you have to say? There's nothing left to say. Not a thing.
I mean,
now,
and they tried to, you know, I can't drive 55 votes to repeal it, and, you know, that all failed. So now I'm pretty much left to, you know, shut up and sit down. That's about let the rest of America get some health care.
The problem that the president said, and I'm trying to look for this little clip here, the president said, I can't understand why governors are now refusing Medicare. What's the story here?
The thing is, these Republicans have gotten so obsessive over it and being driven, of course, and goaded on by these, like, Koch brothers and these Tea Party entities. They've been goaded into just this rabid response where anything remotely related to Obama's evil, you just got to reject it. You can't do it, right? But the reality is, and they need to be called out on it, these politicians, especially governors, are now actively hurting their people. They are denying health care to their own citizens. You know, they're sending their tax dollars away, giving it to other states. So this type of activity needs to be called out for what it is, and they need to be punished for it because they're supposed to represent people, not hurt people.
Just listen to this little thing that the president said. Listen to
the states that don't expand Medicaid are going to be leaving up to 5.4 million Americans uninsured, and that doesn't have to happen. Work with us to get this done.
I mean, you know, what is that? Now, here's what he said further.
Affordable Care Act. I think
let's talk about that.
Brought it up. I think everyone agrees that it has flaws. But Democrats have been sort of reluctant in Congress to reopen the conversation. And Republicans have been more than happy to reopen the conversation, but in a different way. Now that, as you say, it's here to stay, there's so many people that signed up. In this environment, is it possible to do the kind of corrections that the business community and many others would like to see, sort of small technical corrections?
It is absolutely possible, but it will require a change in attitude on the part of the Republicans. I have always said from the outset that on any large piece of legislation like this, there are going to be things that need to be improved, need to be tweaked. I said that, I think, the day I signed the bill. And I don't think there's been any hesitation on our part to consider ideas that would actually improve the legislation. The challenge we have is that if you have certain members in the Republican Party whose view is making it work better is a concession to me, then it's hard in that environment to actually get it done. And I recognize that their party has gone through, you know, the stages of grief, right? And anger and denial and all that stuff. And we're not at acceptance yet. But at some point, my assumption is that there will be an interest to figure out how do we make this work in the best way possible. We have 8 million people signed up through the exchanges. That doesn't include the 3 million young people who are able to stay on their parents' plan. It doesn't include the 3 million people who benefited from expansions of Medicaid. So if my math is correct, that's 14 million right there. You've got another 5 million people who signed up outside of the marketplaces but are part of the same insurance pool. So we've got a sizable part of the U.S. population now that are in the first for the first time in many cases, in a position to enjoy the financial security of health insurance. And I'm reading because I'm on the road. Saw a woman yesterday, young woman, maybe 34, with her mom and her dad, and she's got two small kids and self-employed husband, and it was diagnosed with breast cancer, and this isn't an abstraction to her. She is saving her home. She is saving her business. She is saving her parents' home, potentially, because she's got health insurance, which she just could not afford. And the question now becomes, if in fact this is working for a lot of people, but there are still improvements to make, why are we still having a conversation about repealing the whole thing, and why are we having folks say that any efforts to improve it are somehow handing Obama a victory? This isn't about me. And my hope is that we start moving beyond that. My suspicion is that probably will not happen until after November, because it seems as if this is the primary agenda item in the Republican political platform. But here's what I know. The American people would much rather see us talk about jobs, would much rather see us talk about high college costs, would much rather see us discussing how we can rebuild our roads and our bridges and our infrastructure and put people back to work. They'd much rather see us talk about how we boost wages and boost incomes and improve their individual family bottom lines. And if the Republicans want to spend the entire next 6 months or year talking about repealing a bill that provides millions of people health insurance without providing any meaningful alternative, instead of wanting to talk about jobs and the economic situation of families all across the country, that's their prerogative. At some point, I think they'll make the transition. That's my hope anyway. If not, just because this does frustrate me.
Well, Tops?
Excellent. Yes.
I mean, what's the story with these people? You know, how long do you beat a dead
horse? Well, like
I
said, it's become obsession. It's just become an obsessive reflex. But it's not about him at all. It's like we said, they're pushed by these agenda-driven groups that want to squash certain things, like, say, unions or healthcare or whatever. And these mouthpieces in the Republican Party just do whatever they're told for money. But it is going to become very quickly evident what they're doing, because this guy, this unknown person in office, he ain't going to be in office much longer. And then what's the excuse going to be? You know, they won't have the Al-Qaeda, terrorist, Muslim, commie, Kenyan infiltrator excuse anymore. And so then how are they going to justify 55 more votes to overturn it? You know, it's going to become posed for what it is.
How they're doing it is they've already started on Hillary Clinton, saying that the person that threw the shoe at her the other day was a plant.
Of course.
Her daughter is not really pregnant. That was another plant. I mean, these people, now, yesterday, the president surprised everybody when he came into the briefing room. And this was a part of what he also said. Listen to this.
To say a few words about how the Affordable Care Act is now covering more people at less cost than most would have predicted just a few months ago. The first open enrollment period under this law ended a little over 2 weeks ago. And as more data comes in, we now know that the number of Americans who've signed up for private insurance in the marketplaces has grown to 8 million people. 8 million people. 35% of people who enrolled through the federal marketplace are under the age of 35. All told, independent experts now estimate that millions of Americans who were uninsured have gained coverage this year. with millions more to come next year and the year after. We've also seen signs that the Affordable Care Act is bringing economic security to more Americans. Before this law added new transparency and competition to the individual market, folks who bought insurance on their own regularly saw double-digit increases in their premiums. That was the norm. And while we suspect that premiums will keep rising, as they have for decades, we also know that since the law took effect, healthcare spending has risen more slowly than at any time in the past 50 years. In the decade before the Affordable Care Act, employer-based insurance rose almost 8% a year. Last year, it grew at half that rate. Under this law, real Medicare costs per person have nearly stopped growing. The life of the Medicare Trust Fund has been extended by 10 years, and the independent Congressional Budget Office now expects premiums for plans on the marketplace to be 15% lower than originally predicted. So those savings add up to more money that families can spend at businesses, more money that businesses can spend hiring new workers, and the CBO now says that the Affordable Care Act will be cheaper than recently projected. Lower costs from coverage provisions will shrink our deficits by an extra $100 billion. So, the bottom line is, under the Affordable Care Act, the share of Americans with insurance is up, the growth of health care costs is down, hundreds of millions of Americans who already have insurance now have new benefits and protections, from free preventive care to freedom from lifetime caps on your care. No American with a pre-existing condition like asthma or cancer can be denied coverage. No woman can be charged more just for being a woman. Those days are over. And this thing is working. As I said before, this law won't solve all the problems in our healthcare system. We know we've got more work to do. But we now know for a fact that repealing the Affordable Care Act would increase the deficit, raise premiums for millions of Americans, and take insurance away from millions more. Which is why, as I've said before, I find it strange that the Republican position on this law is still stuck in the same place that it has always been. They still can't bring themselves to admit that the Affordable Care Act is working. They said nobody would sign up. They were wrong about that. They said it would be unaffordable for the country. They were wrong about that. They were wrong to keep trying to repeal a law that is working when they have no alternative answer for millions of Americans with pre-existing conditions who'd be denied coverage again, for every woman who'd be charged more for just being a woman again. Now, I know every American isn't going to agree with this law, but I think we can agree that it's well past time to move on as a country and refocus our energy on the issues that the American people are most concerned about, and that continues to be the economy, because these endless, fruitless repeal efforts come at a cost. The 50 or so votes Republicans have taken to repeal this law could have been 50 votes to create jobs by investing in things like infrastructure or innovation, or 50 votes to make it easier for middle-class families to send their kids to college, or 50 votes to raise the minimum wage or restore unemployment insurance that they let expire for folks working hard to find a new job. The point is, the repeal debate is and should be over. The Affordable Care Act is working, and I know the American people don't want us spending the next 2.5 years refighting the settled political battles of the last 5 years. They sent us here to repair our economy, to rebuild our middle class, and to restore our founding promise of opportunity, not just for a few, but for all. And as president, that's exactly what I intend to keep doing as long as I'm in this office. With that, I'll take some questions.
Now, he went on to take questions I've already played. But Thomas, isn't it clear as day? He said, well, there's some people who aren't going to agree with this. Well, who the hell in their right mind wouldn't agree with this? I mean, right. You have to be a complete moron. Oh, unless you're the person who creates a job. Only those that create a job can do that. Only people that can create a job are the ones that say, you know, I am creating this job for you. So therefore, you have to do what I say. You have to do what I say. Well, how is that even relevant to anything? How do we work for someone? Oh, unless we're a slave. Maybe that's
right.
Maybe that's what these people are talking about.
That's what that guy was talking about down in Arizona, about how good we had it when we were slaves.
That's right, how good we had it when we were slaves. I mean,
come on, Mike, don't you remember those good old days?
No,
I mean,
they gave you
food and some clothes and, you know, well, the jewelry was manacles, but it was clothing and, you know, you had everything provided for you.
The thing is, and I just mentioned it before about the wage gap, the CEOs, they're averaging $11.7 billion while the minimum wage is $15,093.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to give a dime to help.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Anybody.
Here's the thing that's going to change. You know, this thing has only gone into effect in the last few months.
Yes.
It is barely even begun. And yet already, like you just pointed out, tens of millions more are covered in health care, and we've already extended the life on programs for, 10 years now?
Yeah.
It's saving money already. But guess what? This is a drop in the bucket. This is nothing. This is the first few weeks. In years, in decades, the money saved to all these companies, the money saved to our country is going to be astronomical. Because people get healthier. People have health care. They have preventative health care built into this law. They won't be going to hospitals on their deathbed. It's going to save us across the board, so costs are going to decline. Workers will be healthier. They'll have less sick time. They'll have less cost, less expensive costs, because they won't be going in at the last breath. Companies will be rolling in profits.
Well, just listen to this. You're exactly correct. Listen to this.
Matthew Blaylock of Reneers in Greenville found his calling in the culinary field. He also found that the jobs don't always come with health insurance. But now he's covered after finding a plan through the Affordable Care Act.
My insurance is $253 a month, and I got a little over $100 in a discount from the government.
It just means that I can go to a doctor on a regular basis, you know.
The small business owner from York says a friend convinced her to call the hotline for a quote. Now she says she's paying half the rate of her old insurance.
I walked around for 2 days and just almost chanted, I have affordable health care.
Well, does that explain it or what?
Exactly. And you know, in case anybody doesn't quite get it, that last example, for instance, 50% savings she had on that health care. 50% she doesn't have to pay every single month to that one bill. And so what does that mean? 50% more money into our economy. Because you know what you do with that? You go out to dinner. You go to a movie. You go buy some new clothes. You go take a trip. You do things. And guess what that does? Makes money for everybody. Every company has more money. They're selling more stuff. They've got more customers. They're building more. They're sowing more. They're doing everything, and the entire economy takes off. And you think of 50% savings across hundreds of millions of people, we're going to be booming.
We're a hold on. We got a call right here. Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello, caller. Who's this? 93.
Yeah, this is George. I'm not online. I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. All right. You just listen then. The thing is that we have a position now where the CBO has said in 10 years they'll save up to $1 trillion.
With a T.
A trillion. I mean, what are we talking about? Well, hey, you don't hear about $1 trillion in a comic strip when they're blackmailing Gotham City. They want $1 trillion. No, we're talking about real money here, $1 trillion.
You're talking national economies, Mike, $1 trillion. That's no blackmailing the city.
Well, I mean, if you're in Gotham City, They might have $1 trillion, one of those rich people.
No. Maybe Metropolis. Maybe Metropolis.
Oh, that's it. Maybe Metropolis. But the thing is that it's unrealistic to think anything else. We have this Republican Party now. I wash my mouth out with salty soap and water. This regressive party facing is in the last throes of a dying person. It may not be today. It may not be tomorrow. But as they said in Casablanca, it will be soon and for the rest of their life. They don't.
Hey, Mike, what's your joke that you always talk about when they're all the old ex-Confederates and proud Southern boys are talking about, we will rise again and we'll do this and we'll do that. And what's the line? With what?
Put a stake in their heart and break it off so it can't be pulled out. That's what's going to happen here.
Well, you know, they just look. It's this regression. It's this. I don't know what. I don't think it's even valid nostalgia. I think it's a narrow-minded, greedily driven corporate idea that a few companies, millionaires, billionaires, whatever they are, have gotten together, and now that they got their friends in the court, they can put unlimited money into it and get their plans into action by buying off politicians. But they use nostalgia and they use myths and they use lies and they harken back to the good old days, you know, when Ma and Pa and everybody was happy and read the Bible and the slaves didn't come in the house and dirty it up and everything was peachy. But it's not reality. Never has been, never will be. It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy that they're trying to sell. But it's going to collapse because, like you said, they're making the law is already law, and it's already making money. It's already changed things, and there's no going back. You can't go backwards.
That's not what the Canadian senator says.
We need to abolish the IRS. We need to repeal Dodd-Frank. We need to audit the Federal Reserve. We need to repeal every single word of Obamacare.
I realize that contempt is not a big deal to our attorney general, but it is important that we have proper oversight. So,
you don't want to go there, okay?
I don't want to go there?
No.
About the contempt?
You should not assume that that is not a big deal to me. I think that it was inappropriate. I think it was unjust. But never think that that was not a big deal to me. Don't ever think that.
Well, I just don't think it's appropriate, Mr. Holder, be here. If an American citizen had not complied with one of the Justice Department subpoenas, they would be in jail, not sitting here in front of testifying.
I am pleased to note that the last 5 years have been defined by significant strides and by lasting reforms, even in the face of unprecedented, unwarranted, ugly, and divisive adversity. If you don't believe that, you look at the way, and forget about me. You look at the way the Attorney General of the United States was treated yesterday by a House committee. It had nothing to do with me. Forget that. What Attorney General has ever had to deal with that kind of treatment? What president has ever had to deal with that kind of treatment?
Now,
well, I mean, that's absolutely true. One of the things that infuriates me about these people, and you hear the guy, he's up there, you know, throwing words like contempt out.
Right.
You want to talk contempt.
This
is a guy who is just...
Right, that's
well,
a little
look, these are guys who are sitting here spewing hatred every day of this guy's presidency. They've called into question not just his... leadership skills or whatever. They've called into question if he's even American, if he's even a Christian. You know, he's a demonic thing to them, not even real, you know, not even a human. It's unbelievable the things they say. And the contempt spewing out of his own mouth when he's, I will abolish every federal agency. Look, I'm going to get rid of tax. I'm going to get rid of these things. I'm going to repeal every line of the law. That's contempt for America. It's utter contempt.
But you heard what that little twerp Farenthall said, that he didn't want to even sit in front of Holder because he said, Holder, he should be, if any American would do this, they would be in contempt of Congress. Well, wait a minute. This fool in Texas, I mean New Mexico, who refused to pay taxes on the grazing on the federal government land, he owes over $1 million. He's already in contempt. Why isn't that man in jail? And here's the thing. You got the Cattlemen's Association, the Cattlemen's Association that J.R. Ewing was a part of. Anyway, the Cattlemen's Association, they have said, we don't want no part of this man because we pay our taxes for grazing. And you know what it costs?
Exactly.
You know what it costs to graze on public land for your cattle? $35 to $40 a head. You know what it costs to graze federal government land? $1.45.
Right.
This man doesn't even want to pay the $1.45.
What this guy is doing to begin with, he didn't want to pay his share. He just wants profit. He doesn't want to pay anything. So, first of all, he didn't want to pay the $35, so he went over to some neighboring lands where he could pay $1. Then he got thinking about it and said, well, that worked out pretty well. I won't even pay the buck. I'll just keep all the profit. I'm not going to pay anything. And that's the world these people live in, though. It's take. They want to take everything, every cent you got. You pay top dollar for my cattle, buddy, but then they don't want to pay for anything. They don't want to pay taxes. Look at that guy. Cruz just running. I want to abolish the IRS. What world do you live in that you can't pay taxes? You can't have a road. You can't turn on the light switch. You can't have a building without taxes. What world is he talking about? You can't even put a bumper sticker of your favorite military branch with a silhouette of the destroyer or the airplane or the whatever you want to put on it on your SUV so that you can go to the rally and denounce Obama if you don't pay taxes. I mean, you're an idiot of the highest order. There is no military if you don't pay taxes. So, I mean, I cannot fathom this lunacy in the little world they live in. I can't.
Well, but you see, you remember all the old Westerns where they used to get you. I love this line from one of my favorite John Wayne movies where they're going to hang this guy. Jim Davis used to be J.R. Ewing in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Before he died, they're going to hang this guy, John Wayne rides down and says, you're going to hang him? What's he going to hang him for? He said, because he's a sheep herder. He said, stink. I can smell it. He said, you're going to hang the boy too? He said, why? What business is it to you? And he told him his name. He said, Mr. McCandles, I thought you were dead. All right, now they don't want to hang him. They don't want to hang him now. But this man says there's no such thing as the federal government. We've been grazing on this land for 20 years. Nobody said anything to us. That is not true. He's gotten bills from the federal government.
He's ignored them all and not paid them, but he knows just like anybody else. That's why he's there. If it was somebody's private land, and, these are the big NRA supporters, so we'll take it for granted that, the NRA is around. If he was on somebody's private land, they would have done shot him. He was on federal land because they haven't shot him dead yet.
He would have been shot. He would have been shot. Absolutely.
I mean, the federal government was being nice enough to send him bills instead of just shooting him dead.
That's right. But you see, the thing is that what they're saying now is down there that if who is it that was raising the stakes? This guy, oh, I think his name is Bundy. Yeah, Bundy. Anyway, he said that Handy said.
Was his first name Ted?
Cousin, long distance cousin. He's the fat cousin, Bundy. Anyway, he said to him, you're worried that they're going to come there in the middle of the night and kill you or your son or your granddaughter? He said, well, we'll be ready for them if they come down here. And then he told the sheriff, had the nerve to tell the sheriff in the town, I want you to go get those people down there in town, those federal government people, take their guns away and bring them to me, and I want them laying right here in front of me. Are you kidding me? Is this man completely nuts? But yes.
Hey, Mike, come on. He's just a little you know, megalomania, little messiah complex. It's okay. It's okay.
Well, the thing is,
you know,
that they
kind of like that.
No,
bring me the head of Herod on the plate.
Actually, his name is Cleveland Bundy, I believe it is. Anyway, everything especially these clowns that they have with them with the guns that will land on the overpass with rifles trained on the federal workers. Now, what do you think would have happened? What do you think would have happened if one of them federal workers was shot?
Right.
Now, here's the thing. This is after years. I mean, it's more than 21 years. Bundy says he doesn't recognize any federal authority over land when his ancestors first settled here in 1880s. Oh, there was no one there? There were no Indians? I don't think so. Which he claims belongs to the state of Nevada. He said, now the Bureau of Land Management is a federal court. We don't recognize the federal government here.
Well, look, even let's just take all that apart real quickly. Regardless of the Indians, let's ignore them because, you know, we treat them badly enough and we've given them nothing ever anyway and took all their lands. So let's just remove them from the picture that they were the inhabitants. So it's really ironic for any of us to say, you know, oh, it's my land, not yours. But besides that, his ancestors went out there. Why? Because the federal government pushed for settlement of the West, and they opened up territories, and they sent out, and then they gave people land claims if they'd move out there. And they encouraged it, they paid for it, sponsored it, and then they built towns, roads, wells, everything else to enable it. So give me a freaking break yet again. All these freeloaders who think that they just don't have to have taxes or anything else, and that somehow magically everything in their life, their homes, their jobs, their roads, all their amenities, you know, his truck that he likes to drive around in, all of that just magically came about out of spontaneous creation out of the ground.
Well,
it's just stupid. It's stupid, Michael.
Well, this is what's really outrageous. The federal government, to boost that state's ailing economy in the early 20th century, told the people, hey, go out there. Create some people out there. The Wild West. And that's why they were able to have their own permissive laws of divorce and gambling and prostitution. And they brought in tourism. And then the thing is that all of a sudden this man says, well, this is mine. It ain't nobody else. This man is completely, and what's going to happen is they don't have to take guns from this man. They don't have to go out there and take his cattle. All they got to do is seize his bank account.
Yeah.
And his cattle, well, that's all they'll eat. They'll be eating grass, but you know what? He'll be out there eating grass with them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, I mean, this whole thing is a joke, but even let's turn it on its head. Let's say his way comes about, this Republican dream of the back to cowboys, right? So let's say that's the law. There is no law. Federal government's gone. Everybody, it's man on man. Everybody's on their own, okay? So he's sitting out there with a whole herd of cattle. If that's the law of the land, that anything you want is yours, you know, he just went out there in the grass and took it. That's his, right? Well, then I'll show up with a bigger gun. Is it mine now? I mean, that's what you get to, you know, and it just gets down to the meanest guy wins. I mean, you know, if somebody comes to you when you're sleeping in the middle of the night and chops your head off and takes land, then, hey, it's his, right? Isn't that what he just said? He took it from the government. I mean, you know, so, I mean, it's stupid. And this isn't Mad Max. We don't live that way. We have laws and we have civilization. So I'm just tired of this fantasy, noble, savage crap that they come up with, because it is crap. It is absolute junk.
Now listen to this. It says here that Nevada Constitution, all political power is inherent in the people. Government is instituted for the protection, security, and benefit of the people, and they have the right to alter and reform the same whenever the public good may require it. But the paramount allegiance of every citizen is due to the federal government in the exercise of all its constitutional powers as the same has been or may be defined by the Supreme Court of the United States. And no power exists in the people of this or any other state of the federal union to dissolve their connection therewith or perform any act tending to impair, subvert, or resist the supreme authority of the government of the United States. The Constitution confers full power on the federal government to maintain and perpetuate its exercise, and whatsoever any portion of the states or people thereof attempt to secede from the federal union or forcibly resist the execution of its laws, the federal government may, by warrant of the Constitution, employ armed force to compel obedience to this authority. Now, this man says he only believes in the Nevada Constitution. Well, this is the Nevada Constitution.
Right. Because, again, Mike, you're pointing out the truth. And you're talking intelligently, and this is again a farce. It's a lie. It's a BS myth, and it doesn't exist. He's not a cowboy and a hero and a cavalier and all this stuff. And like you said, when you point out, you know, if you point that out to him, first he'll say you're using big words. Then he'll say you're lying, and then he'll say, "Well, I didn't believe in the Nevada Constitution either. I believed in, you know, my county, or then me, or whatever, you know." So it's all BS, because again, the truth is directly opposite of what he's saying and doing. But again, turning it on his head, how would he feel if his neighbor comes over and starts grazing on all his and shows his cow out of the way or says, "This is my land"? I mean, what, you know, he did it. First, so why couldn't the next guy do it to him? I mean, you know.
Absolutely. Well, is he going to shoot the next guy?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he had all his little buddies up there going to shoot. I mean, if that's the law of the land, you just shoot anybody that opposes you, then shoot all them. And, you know, where does it end?
It ends when this man is out there grazing in the grass with his cow because he don't have food to put on his table. Oh, yes, he does. He done cooked one of the cows.
Yep.
Well, here's one for you.
Here's a conundrum for you, Mike. Since these are probably, I don't know, but most of these knuckleheads are professed to be Christians, you know, these days. So if he's a devout Christian, evangelical nutbag, here's a conundrum. If you read in the Bible, all violence and evil and murder came into the world because Cain saw his brother being successful with his farm and his land and all of his wives, and he slew him out of jealousy so he could take his herd. You know, I mean, so, you know, watch out what you wish for is what I'm saying.
Well, but how do you miss the line where it says the Constitution of the United States gives full power of the federal government to maintain in perpetuity its existence and whatever any portion of the state. How do you miss it?
He didn't miss it. He didn't read it. He doesn't believe in it. It's a lie. It's just something to say. it's so that these people on Fox News can all stand around and pat on each other's back and say, that's right, we uphold the Constitution of our state over the federal dictatorship coming here to steal our land. You know, I mean, come on, Mike, it's a joke. It's pathetic is what it is.
Well, Bundy is out there with his grandson and his son and his granddaughter.
Fox News. Don't forget Fox News.
On Fox News. Fox News, some of their commentators now are backing away. Can you believe that?
Because just like you, as soon as you look at any aspect of it, the fact that he's taken land, the fact that he doesn't pay his bills, and the fact that he says he professes to uphold the Constitution that directly contradicts everything he just said. After you look at the facts of the case, there's nothing to support.
Tucker Carlson said yesterday, the man is a criminal. He owes $1.2 million. He needs to pay his taxes like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Cattlemen's Association down here in Texas and New Mexico, Arizona, says, mm-hmm. He's no longer in our association.
Right.
So
because he's an illegal thug. Hey, here's another example for you, Mike. A duality of the world. Where was Fox News and the outcry? Where were the guys on the freeway overpasses with their sniper rifles?
Oh yeah.
When this actor in Hollywood who didn't want to pay his bills. He said the federal government didn't. He didn't have to pay bills because he didn't believe in war. He didn't believe in all this drug on crime, war on crime crap. He wasn't going to just participate in that. So he wasn't going to pay his federal government because he didn't believe the IRS had legal authority to compel him to pay for things he didn't believe in. So he didn't pay his bills. And then they, guess what? They came and arrested him and hauled him out in the middle of a successful multi-million-dollar career and slammed him in jail like a common crook.
That is terrible.
Now, where was Fox News? I didn't see a single snipes or on any overpass anywhere. So what the heck, Fox News? I thought you were supporting these guys that rebelled against the evil authority of the federal government and refused to pay the IRS, which needs to be abolished. So, I mean, come on, which is it? Which way are you going to go? Ironic?
What does Bill O'Reilly say about these people who don't want to pay their bills?
Well, I think if he was black, he'd probably run whole segments on him talking about what a thug he was and he doesn't support the country. But if he was a white rancher, he probably called him a hero. I'm just guessing. I'd have to go back and find the tape.
No, that's a fact. Don't know if that's a fact.
Yeah.
you don't know. Maybe he was just a bull rider. Or is that bull thrower?
I mean, I would love to see what Fox News' take on, like, Wesley Snipes, for instance, was back during that IRS arrest versus...
Hey, Bill O'Reilly said that these guys think they can perform out of the country and not pay their bills. Well, that's not true. They have to pay their bills like every one of us. Oh, like he paid
the
bill?
You mean like ranchers?
Like ranchers. That's absolutely true. Like ranchers.
Amen. Have a double standard much, Mike?
Yes. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. That's very true. That's what we do. We have a double standard. And the problem is, why? Why do we have a double standard?
I don't know.
Yeah, why do we have a double standard?
You know? Because you know what? When someone else pushes Obamacare on their people and forces them to go to doctors and be part of the plan or be fined, they call them Mitt Romney. But when Obama does it, they say 55 repeals. He's un-American. He's a terrorist. Yeah. You know? So come on.
Is that the thing? Well, you see, the problem is when you get 55 repeals, there's always that 56. There's always that 56.
I hope when he leaves office, whatever the final number is, I may send it to him myself, but whatever the final number is, I'm going to send him a jersey with that number on it. and it's going to say repeal on the back, and I'm going to send it to Obama, and I hope he wears it.
Well, never, ever give up, because when you give up, you have to now say they won. Can you imagine if these guys ever said that this president won? I mean, can you believe that? Well, now,
hey, you know what?
What?
Here's the sad part, Mike. They don't have to say nothing. He did win. Not only did he win, he was reelected. He won twice. And
well,
not only did he do that, he also passed health care for the first time in 70 years in this country. So, you know what? Too bad.
Now, we also have this other end of the whole. Well, I think this other guy, Glenn Cross, a.k.a. Glenn Miller, and I don't mean the band either.
Oh, I was fixing to get really happy and get some swing time going. But
No. Well, let's just listen to what this guy just did.
In fact, Diana, Jews are increasing. God, Glenn, you and your crazy numbers, you know, whites are not.
Well, it is all of them. I wouldn't even be in the movie if not for that. Everything that's killing us was brought about by Jews.
The legalization
of abortion that has already killed, 40 million white babies in the United States.
He's been on our radar for more than 30 years now. We really tangled with him back in the 1980s when we brought suit against him and his group, the Carolina Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, and later a second group, the White Patriot Party, that he formed. Very similar. These groups were both essentially kind of paramilitary Klan organizations, used to march through the streets of North Carolina carrying weapons and wearing fatigues and all that kind of thing. What actually happened was we ultimately got a consent decree, or rather an agreement, a signed agreement with him in which he agreed to stop harassing and intimidating black North Carolinians and to stop operating paramilitary groups. He very quickly broke that consent decree and as a result was convicted of criminal contempt. He went on the lam. Was a fugitive for several months, was ultimately found by the FBI in 1987, holed up in a trailer with several other Klansmen, a lot of C4 plastic explosives, hand grenades, and a whole lot of other weapons, and a plan to assassinate the founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Morris Deeks. 10, 12 years ago, it was all about non-white immigration, essentially Latino immigration. With the appearance of Barack Obama on the scene in the fall of 2008, and, of course, his election of president, the group growth began to accelerate quite a lot. We saw militia groups absolutely explode, go from about 150 to almost 1,400 groups in the space of 4 years. And that really has to do, again, with the changing racial demographics of the country as represented in the person of Barack Obama. The Census Bureau has predicted that non-Hispanic whites in America will lose their majority, will fall under 50% of the population by about the year 2043. And that's what's really going on here. These groups, the individuals out there, you know, feel that the country is being stolen from them, that they've lost certainly their dominant position, and they're angry. And some of them are angry enough to engage in the kind of mass murder that Miller allegedly did.
Now, this is this guy.
There's a profile for you.
Whew. I mean, this is a TV movie. No, this is a regular movie. This man, he's 73 years old. He's charged with shooting up the place at a Jewish community center, a retirement home in Overland Park, Kansas. Left three people dead, and he was the former, as Mark Potok, who we just heard, said was the former Grand Dragon of the Carolina Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, yeah.
And he was taken into custody in a trailer park. I mean, well, I guess that's better
the breeding ground of these cockroaches, you know.
Now, there's nothing wrong with a trailer. But when you add park to it, now you make the connotation. See, I mean, you have double trailers. California, they got trailers that are double wide, triple wide, that are two stories, three stories. But this was a trailer in a trailer park. But he had, what's that, the Rush Limbaugh he talks about? He had a widescreen TV. I mean, so.
Gotta have the important stuff, man. Gotta have the important stuff.
He said, now the thing is that the only reason why they went to his place, because he was listed under Glenn Cross, he dropped the Glenn Miller, because then they really were.
You know, no, Cross.
Oh, yeah.
Just think about it, Mike. Was his middle name Burning?
It was. No.
Yes, Ben Burning Crosses.
Yes, that's true. But
I think he's so punny that way.
But he is saying that the Jewish population is far more dangerous than the blacks. Because,
of
hey,
course, that's the whole Nazi mentality where the Jews are the root of all evil.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well,
and I loved his statement that, you know, he thought that was the reason we have abortions and all is because their secret plan is to eradicate the white people from the earth. You see, so they've got it's like saying they are sterilizing and euthanizing us all. You know.
You mean the Nazis? Well,
unfortunately, Mike, history has proven that only happens to Jewish people, but the myth is that they do it to other people.
Well, here's Jess McIntosh, young lady from Emily's List. This is what he is. She didn't say
just,
about this.
This is just disgusting, hateful, racist rhetoric that was used during one of the country's largest tragedies, when I think the vast majority of Americans were crying for New Orleans,
right,
and were feeling for the people who were displaced from their homes, who were sticking it out. I mean, this is so far against what America believes in. I can't imagine the guy getting traction. I think it's interesting that he's running against Senator Cochran, who is not a moderate. The man that he is challenging is not Olympia Snow. He is not J.K. Bailey Hutchinson. The Republican Party has lurched so far to the right that they can't see moderate anymore. If Todd Akin were running this year, he would be hailed as one of the reasonable candidates out there. It's not just in Mississippi. You pointed out Georgia. It's in North Carolina. These are extremists running this year.
Right. Look. They were talking about this guy, Chris McDaniel from your home state of Mississippi, that says all those people that means drowned on purpose. It seems like they are coming out of the woodwork.
Definitely. And here's the thing. Not only is it just racist response to the fear of a black man in office type thing. But this is the culmination of it's like the perfect storm. You've got demographic shifts. You've got religion is fading for the first time in this country. You've got things like the growth of equal rights and same-sex marriage that's threatening them on that front. So, you know, everybody in the world apparently is turning into a gay black communist or something. So their whole world is crashing down on them. And then on top of it, you have this perfect storm with people like the Koch brothers who have been given carte blanche to spend any amount of money they need to get their agenda done. And one thing that they've learned is, you know, if you just go to people and say, hey, can I pollute your water? And can I, like, dump toxic waste in your backyard? They go, no, that sounds horrible. But so instead, if they go and say, hey, extremist fruitcake, if I give you $10 million and run your campaign for office, when you get in, I'll, you know, let you do whatever you want to, you know, the blacks and the Jews, but will you pass a law that lets me pollute and dump toxic waste in everybody's backyard and all that? And they'll go, sure, because they want in. They just want in office because they got some Jews to kill. You know, it's like they've been having a hard time trying to get elected, you know. So it's a perfect storm that now they get money and backing from unlimited corporate sources where they now have a voice and a platform that they've never had before, because used to anybody that lived outside of the trailer couldn't hear them.
Oh, absolutely.
But now they
can.
You know, now they got a national platform, and that's what's happening, and that's what's scary. That's why these extremists are getting into office when they have no chance at all in a normal world.
Well, but you see, but they speak about the normal world. We have people now. I don't know if you heard about the problem that Hank Aaron is having down in Atlanta. Hank Aaron is vice president of the Atlanta Braves, and he has been inundated with racist hate mail at the calling out racism in America. Hank Aaron said, according to the USA Today, he said the Atlanta Braves have faced a deluge of racist hate mail after Hank Aaron, the legendary home run hitter, said that racism is indeed alive and well in America today. And said the Braves organization has received hundreds of letters, emails, and phone calls since Aaron said a week ago, sure, this country has a black president, but when you look at a black president, President Obama is left with his foot stuck in the mud. All the Republicans with the way he's been treated. Later, he added, the big difference is back then they had hoods. Now, neck and starch.
True. Yep.
So
if you needed more proof that he was accurate, it's the fact that they just got flooded with letters and hate calls. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I mean, that proves it. That's right. I'd like to have all the nut jobs call me in. Well, nut jobs aren't going to call in. But I tell you what, you nut jobs will put your name in the paper. Oh, yeah, we'll all call in. So now they're all calling in. Now, the thing is that
because of those extremists like Hank Aaron.
you know, right.
You got real threats, you know, like that. You know, oh, the home run hitter. Oh, my God, it's the end of America, you know. He is the poster of America.
I won't be able to buy my spittoon or trailer in the park anymore. A man called Edward.
Hey, that's something we need back. Spittoons, Mike. We need a lobby for spittoons in every business, like the good old days.
In the movies and other places. A man named Edward helpfully suggested that Hank Aaron is a scumbag piece of black blah, 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 a racist slur, USA said today. Edward invokes the epithet five times in four sentences, closing with, my old man instilled in my mind from a young age that the only good blank is a dead blank. Marion called Aaron a racist.
Oh, feel the love. Oh,
that's
such
right.
A good Christian
Ronald,
that was.
Ronald said he will not attend another Braves game unless Aaron is fired. Mark calls Aaron a classless racist. David said he will burn Aaron's I Had a Hammer autobiography. Aaron keeps his letters, despite the extremely hurtful nature of them, to remind myself we are not that far removed from when I was chasing the record. If you think of that, you're fooling yourself. A lot of things have happened in this country, but we have so far to go. There's not a whole lot that has changed.
You know the part that I love the best out of all of those? It is not the, you know, disgusting profanity spewing one. It was the guy that said he's going to burn his book.
That guy really
cracks me up because, guess what? Burn it, don't burn it, flush it in the toilet, don't matter, dog. You already paid for it, and Hank's already got your money, buddy.
Already got your money, he spent it. Already spent your money. It's just 14. Five gold watches. I mean, come on, give me a break.
I just love it. It's like these people. I'm gonna hurt myself despite you. Okay, you go right ahead.
I'm gonna hold my breath and turn blue if you don't say yes. Okay, start now. These people are so
crap. I love stupid people. They just make me funny. Oh my! Make my day, Mike.
Yeah. You have family in town today, right?
I do indeed. I do indeed. Yeah, we've got family visiting. We are enjoying. I actually was going to skip today's show. I'm trying to get here, but that's why I was late getting on anyway. I actually thought I was going to have to miss it. But no, yep, we got my son from Washington is here. Very nice. And he is indeed. They are actually playing Dungeons and Dragons, which is another, you know, godless fantasy thing that we do. But he's entertaining. He's entertaining the kids while I'm on the phone.
Doesn't the CIA and a couple of other three-letter agencies have Dungeons and Dragons for real in Guantanamo Bay?
They do indeed. They do indeed. Probably dungeon locations throughout the world and all these black sites.
That's true. Black sites, that's right. You're absolutely correct. So your son...
Well, you know,
is...
now my son, now I'll just say he just works for the government. Has worked for a lot of different agencies, like the General County Office. He's done computing work for several different agencies. And let me tell you one thing he mentioned the other day that was enlightening.
Another one of the things, the GAO. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the General Accounting Office. They don't know what that is. That's the General Accounting Office. And his job, I mean, he used to have a badge and everything else, but his job was to go into agencies, organizations, and companies, and make sure that they were actually, saving American taxpayers' dollars, and they weren't wasting it, weren't inflating costs, and they weren't doing other things. His job was to make sure.
You mean like the CIA?
like any agency. He's been to all the different ones. He worked with NASA. He's worked with everything. But one of the things that was really enlightening to me is he was mentioning, you know, under this horrible Marxist, communist, fascist dictator that we got.
Yes.
He actually, you know, President Obama, one of the things he did was he instigated across the board a look at everybody's budget. He wanted everybody to make sure they were as efficient as possible and, if at all possible, to cut back any waste in any overlap in any agencies anywhere so that we saved American dollars. And that was a large part of his job, doing that. And he went around and made sure that all these agencies were lean and doing what they were supposed to be doing and saving money. And they were doing that hand over fist. I mean, the government, look at the records under Obama. They saved an immense amount of money just by streamlining and making sure that they were efficient instead of bloated and inefficient.
You mean like having instead of a $2,000 hammer, it's only 45 cents.
Exactly, things like that. Or in your case, you know, instead of paying $100 for a bag of fluid in the hospital, maybe we could pay, you know, a dollar. You know, there's a lot of ways we could be efficient and save American tax dollars.
Well, yeah. Now that would be pretty good if you could do a little intravenous Grey Goose through the bag. I mean,
Now see that would, and then you also wouldn't have to have all those other pills like painkillers and things like that. See, it'd be all in one.
Be like
liquid
that.
And relaxing. Yeah, I like that.
There are one other thing I wanted to get to is one of my favorite subjects, the G, another three letter word, the GWB. How about that? Hey, I got that right.
GWB.
That's the George Washington Bridge. I mean.
Oh, George Washington Bridge.
Yes.
Is that a bridge between two states or something, Mike? I don't understand. What is the George Washington Bridge? Why don't you explain that to me?
The bridge. We've had some things going on there, too. This man is a real, real winner. We got that... a little portly man in Jersey named Chris Christie. He says
because he liked the name so much he used it twice.
That's right. People haven't even got that. They just say, "Oh, hey, it's Chris Christie. Yes, but Chris Christie now, he's in a little trouble here, and I'd like you to play, I'd like to play just a little bit of what was said about Christie. He now has some ethics problems coming along.
Jersey Star Ledger is reporting that three former officials with the New Jersey Ethics Commission are now accusing Governor Christie's office of, quote, unprecedented interference with an agency set up to be free of political influence. Christie, they say, pushed the agency commissioners to replace the executive director at a time when she was investigating a member of his staff, and in so doing, Christie crossed a line no other governor had before. Let's start with the Mastro memoranda, the impressions, the mental watercolors that have been painted for the viewing public. According to Randy Mastro's report, Christie had no specific recollections of conversations with Barone and Wildstein, especially on September 11th, the day in question when Wildstein says he talked to Chris Christie about Bridgegate. But he remembers other things about that day, including this, which just defies explanation. I will read an excerpt from that memoranda. Before the 9/11 memorial event began, the governor recalled that Mrs. Christie asked to use a bathroom, and David Wildstein directed her to a large white Port Authority trailer. She went into the van and then exited, saying that there was no bathroom in the trailer. A female Port Authority Police Department officer, who was possibly Barone's driver, then took Mrs. Christie to the bathroom. Otherwise, Mrs. Christie was with the governor throughout the event. Now, explain to me how you as the governor say don't remember anything about a possible traffic jam that was inconveniencing tens of thousands of your own residents, but you do remember about your wife being guided to the wrong ladies' room.
Well, I think the details on where Mrs. Christie went to the bathroom on September 11th are a really important thing, that it's good that the taxpayers of New Jersey paid probably a couple $1,000s in legal fees to
just for that detail.
Just for that detail. I mean, this report is so weird. Like, how you conduct an investigation like this, where you do all these interviews and you don't keep transcripts or recordings of the interviews. It's hard to think of any reason to do that other than you don't want people to come into possession of those transcripts of the interviews and use them in their own investigations. So it's another thing that points to this report having been basically a political act, trying to put forward Chris Christie's version of events in the story. And I don't think that was a good use of taxpayer money, but I also don't think it was effective. This report hasn't been received in the way that I think the governor's office was hoping that it would, as an authoritative account of what happened leading up to the bridge lane closing.
Yeah, Sal, Josh makes a really good point. This is supposed to be the great sort of vindication tour for Chris Christie, and yet in this report, it's clear that the specifics and the vagaries are very purposeful and both intended on giving the governor as much wiggle room or as much leeway as possible. I'll read one other excerpt. The governor did not recall any conversations at all that the senior staff at the senior staff retreat about the Rockefeller Group, and he did not recall any conversations with the lieutenant governor about Mayor Zimmer at the senior staff retreat, nor did the governor recall any conversation with the lieutenant governor about Mayor Zimmer since May 1st of last year. I mean, that does not exactly, I think, a signal. It's not a vote. I don't think New Jersey taxpayers would give that report its a vote of confidence, if you will.
Now, this man, who is the governor of New Jersey, was a U.S. attorney, and he uses the words, I can't recall. That is the words that you use when you don't want to say, I take the Fifth Amendment. That's the same words. You know, this
exactly.
All came out. If you listen to the Watergate investigation while you were alive, they used the words that was coming from John Dean. I can't recall.
Yeah. Did you hire a plumber?
Yeah.
I can't recall.
He remembers the detail of his wife not being able to go to the bathroom, but he can't recall ever speaking to Wildstein when we have three pictures of him laughing it up with Wildstein and Bridget Kelly and David Sampson. We got three pictures of them together. I mean,
let's just be clear about this, Mike, because I was trying to let you set it up earlier. I just want people to be clear. This is a bridge that connects New Jersey to New York City.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
this isn't weed grown outback little bridge in some county in the hinterlands of Missouri or something. This is the largest, most important city in America, and a bridge that's connecting, you know, the financial capital of the world to your state, and you don't remember if it was cut off or not, or closed, or...
Well, this is the problem. As a Homeland Security major cog, how would people have gotten out if there was a major problem on either side of the bridge?
Hey, Mike, here's a hypothetical. What if there had been a Category 4 hurricane? I'm just curious.
No, they don't occur.
That would never happen. That never happens in New Jersey.
You see, now you're thinking about you're just going a little bit too much now. Hurricane. That doesn't happen. That's not even relevant. But
of course. Again, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous that a governor can sit there with a straight face and say he doesn't remember ever talking about a bridge being closed to the biggest, most important city like that's directly across the water from you. I mean, come on.
So you didn't see the wink. You didn't see the wink and the nod.
Yeah.
You did that. It was a wink and a nod. And just like when we started
Mike, it's that I can't recall a wink and a nod.
Oh, you can't recall. No, that's how it should be. A wink and a nod. But I can't recall it. It could have been a wink.
Anything could have been. I could have been talking to Wildstein. I could have been laughing about it at the moment the picture was taken, but I can't recall if that's what we were laughing about.
I'm
safe legally.
He does see, because he said he don't recall ever speaking to Wildstein or seeing Wildstein. See, so he can't say that. While I was with Wildstein, no thing. He was not even near Wildstein. And, you know, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he's saying.
Well, the real truth is here, Christie is just a patriot. He's trying to protect America's most important asset, and that is our spy agencies, because what his wife really did was went into the correct trailer, and she entered the broom closet, and she went down into headquarters, like Get Smart, through all the different doors. Dun, 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 you know. And he's just protecting that asset because it was a Get Smart operation. I mean, come on.
It was a Get Smart
He had to make up the whole bathroom thing. You know, come on. People need to get off his case. He's a hero. A hero, Mike.
He is a hero. Well, that's what I'd like to have. Heroes like him. But, so what are you, your son visiting and the rest of the kiddies, dark out here, like it's going to rain. I see it over in through the trees over there.
We're having that
dark
weather again, you know, every week we roll the dice. We go from 70 to 30 every week. So it's been a little bit crazy.
So what are you planning on doing?
Nefarious things.
Nefarious.
No, we're doing nothing. We've been actually we're just having some fun time. Kitties are off. We're getting ready for Easter. We're gonna go out to dinner. We're gonna actually think about going to a movie. You know, there's all kind of easy things, but we are mainly hanging out.
You were mentioning to me about a movie subject, and I didn't get a chance to go on the Facebook to see what you sent me. Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, but that was a separate thing. I'm hoping to have them on next week, actually. There is a local movie filmed here that a young black filmmaker made. There are actually two different ones that I was looking at that one local filmmaker made, wanted to talk with him and his stars. And the other was actually a young man I happened to meet recently who is he did the score for a movie. He does musical scores. And he did all the music for this movie and the soundtrack for it, and another local film. So I wanted to bring them on so that we could just have a little cultural conversation. We need to have a movie. We haven't done a movie review in a while, so I thought that'd be a nice thing.
We got a Big Gaffin listening in, and was this movie filmed here?
It was filmed here in Charlotte. Charlotte, North Carolina. So it's just an independent film. It's not a huge, gigantic thing. But, you know, it's not Captain America 2, but, you know, it's a nice thing. But anyway, I'll see if I can. I was going to actually get him on the show today. I didn't get a hold of him in time because I was running around. But I will try to get him for next week, and we can ask him directly all about the movie. But I thought we'd highlight some local talents. But
well,
we can
like
also
that.
We can talk national. We can talk big films if you want. We can sling a shield, whatever you like.
Well, yeah. Well, we will. We'll talk about this. I want there's a review that I have to read that Big Gaff wrote about his latest review, and for a moment, let me see if I can.
Which movies has he seen lately?
He just saw a movie, and he sent me something on it, and Lord knows I don't know what it is. And hold on, let's see what Big Gaff is here now. Big Gaff, what's the name of that movie you just saw and you just did a review for? Are you with us? Big Gaff is not there.
Oh, there he is.
Big Gaff, are you there? No, I guess he's not.
Oh, I thought I heard him somewhere.
But anyway, he just did a review, and I have to look at it, and I can't remember what it was. I know he just sent it to me.
Well, we can do that next week too.
Next week.
But here's the question: Did you ever get out to see the big blockbuster of the last week, there, buddy?
No, I haven't because I was sick last week. Again, my sciatica is acting up on me, so
yeah.
I haven't seen it. We'll be.
I'm gonna have to drag. I'm gonna have to drag your broken body out, sir.
I know it's really getting bad, and I
but that was a great movie. And besides that, you get to see Sam Jackson.
Yeah. Well, hey, here's the thing that for people who watch the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he was supposed to gotten killed by Hydra 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Now, see, those who don't know Hydra, I know you can tell us a little bit about Hydra. Well, who is Hydra, Thomas?
Hydra in the Marvel Universe is a, you know, evil organization bent. It was originally created by, you know, crazy Nazi super villains. But anyway, it's survived into the present day. And its theme, you see the name Hydra, gives you the idea. But its theme is that it can never be stamped out because every time you kill one head or stop one branch of it, it just grows two more. And it keeps going like a cancer. And so it spreads everywhere and tries to infiltrate everything so that it can have global control. And that's its whole agenda.
Well,
it is very much involved in the Captain America 2 movie and, of course, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because that's one of the things that they are fighting against the whole time.
Yeah, well, I finally caught up to that portion of it, and I forgot who plays the head of Hydra on the TV series. But anyway, they're down to the part. Well, I'm down to the part where the Coulson and his crew are getting away, and they got away, and they're at their secret location, and they're all upset because they think Nick Fury is dead, and he says, tell them, no, Nick Fury is not dead. He was not there. So I guess we're going to have a slow change here because what they'll have to do, they'll have to bring Nick Fury into the television show to explain to Coulson why he's still alive and when they take over. But they're going to have to take over.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I'm very upset about is that
you also
TV
have to watch the show because it's tied directly to the Captain America 2 storyline, and it's all
right.
Explained in that movie
right.
as well.
Well, you see, and the thing is that so that means that Nick to me, and I don't want to give away, no, I won't give away anything, but I won't give away it. But anyway, the thing is that they have tied, just like you said, the TV show into Captain America 2, which is really
right.
Fabulous. I got that as soon as Nick Fury, as soon as I did the review on the Captain America 2 and saw the storyline with this one, I said, oh, man. So he's going to have to appear. He's going to have to appear.
Yep.
They're
doing a good job. They're Marvel is now their entertainment division. Is trying to do kind of like the comics. You know, the comics used to be one thing about Marvel that was cool was that they had a one world. So everybody was part of the same universe. It wasn't like, you know, they had different fantasy verses they were all in. They were all part of the real world. And so when events happened in one book, like Avengers, it would bleed over into the other books of Iron Man or Thor or whatever, you know. So they're doing that in the movies now, and it's really nice.
Well, I think that what got me a little upset in storyline and TV series was this guy is bad. The agent that was trained and I can't believe it. It's got to be an ulterior motive here, which I don't know, but he's already killed some agents. So I just can't believe the storyline would go that far with the storyline. But we'll have to see this week the new episode. So
we're good
to see this Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And you guys and your son and Celine and Alex and Jenna and all the rest of them have a great Easter. Because it's
certainly
time
will.
To
certainly
get
will.
The heck out of here. Even though I'm in
trouble.
It's raining already. How about that?
It is.
Okay.
It is. I will raise a glass to you, sir. Cheers to you.
I have a little apple pie here. So I'm gonna...
Oh, cruel man. Well, I'll just have to suffer with my buffalo.
That's right. I don't have any fork. I don't need a fork with it, but it's good. All right. I'll call you later tonight.
Okay, will do.
Talk to you later.
Give me
a
call.
Right,
take care. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, everybody.
I'm Archibald of the Thrills of Houston, Texas. We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want. In Houston, we've just started a new dance called the Tighten Up. This is the music we tighten up with. First, tighten up on the drum. Come on now, drummer. I want you to tighten it up for me now. Oh, yeah. Tighten up on that bass now. Tighten it up. Yeah. Now let that guitar fall in. Oh, yeah. Tighten up on the organ now.
Yeah, you do the tighten up. Yeah, now. I said if you can do it now, the show will be tough. Now look here. Come on now. Now make it mellow. Just tighten it up now. Do the tighten it up. Everybody can do it now. So get to it. We're gonna tighten up. Let's do the tighten up. You can do it now. So baby get to it. Let's do your left now. Let's do your right. Everybody can do it. But don't you get too tight. Come on and tighten up. I'm tying it up now. I'm tying it up now. Tying it up. Do the tying up. Come on and tying it up. Tying it up now. Come on now, Billy. Tying it up.
Oh, yeah.
Talk it
to me now. Tying it up. Come on. Tying up that bass. Oh, yeah. Now look here. I want that guitar to fall in on that. Tighten it up now. Oh, yeah. Now tighten it up, Augie. Yeah, now everybody tighten it up now. Now look here, we gonna make it mellow for you now. We gonna make it mellow now. You can get it. Move to your left, move to your right. Sign it up now. Everything will be out of sight. Come on and sign it up. Sign it up now. You can do it.